Good morning. Shepherd, could you give us honor with prayer this morning? And Ms. Gates, could you lead us a pledge of allegiance after that? Would everybody stand, please?
Okay. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay, let's pray. Dear Heavenly Father, guide us today. Lead us in your will. Let us glorify you in all that we do here today around the circle. Let us be a blessing to our city and to each one of our constituents in what we do and the concern for them. Thank you for this great city, Lord. Continue to bless us and let us grow beyond bounds. Thank you for all you've given us. Thank you, Lord, for this day. Even though it doesn't look good, the good things will come from it. So take care of us, lead us, guide us in your will. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
Ms. Gates?
I pledge to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We got a special presentation with Jill Jordan. Is that Ms. Ashore? Jill, that's you, Jill. Please.
This is a team. This is Mr. Caraway and myself.
Ms. Caraway.
Mr. Caraway is going to start off.
Okay.
Jump start this thing, huh? All right.
Oh.
All right. It gives me great pleasure today to welcome and talk about the Trinity River Photo Contest. This is a contest that you know, they go out and they get to that beautiful Trinity River and they take those beautiful pictures, and it comes into and turns into our contest, and we have our contested winners here today. Good morning, colleagues and special guests. Welcome to the presentation of the 2014 Trinity River Photo Contest winners. Thank all of you for being here. Thank each and every one of you for being here. And I know you've taken time from school and work, so we'll get you back to your responsibilities. We'll get you back to the schools as quickly as possible with excused absences for the kids and the children that are here. So we're going to give you an excused absence. Jerry, you're going to write out the excused absence, and AC, you and Mayor Pro Tem Atkins are going to sign it, okay? And you all take it on back to the schools with you. Each year since 2009, hundreds of photographers have accepted our invitation and ventured out to take wonderful photos along the Trinity River corridor. In another way that Dallas and North Texas showcases the talent of young people of all ages. Now, this contest is promoted by the City of Dallas and Trinity Commons Foundation. Craig Holcomb is our executive director of the Trinity Commons Foundation and has been a supporter of this program, raising funds to make it possible. Now, the collections of winning images debuted at the Latino Cultural Center in January and early February during the closing reception. Manishasara expressed the best. The Trinity River Photo Contest may have given my son and me the time together exploring a new part of Dallas and to discover the photographic talent. Let me just add into that I canoed the Trinity River 25 miles. Now, I'll never do it again. It was a great experience, however. And upon canoeing the Trinity River, I saw so many beautiful things down in that Trinity. I saw spring waters that were running out of the rocks with all of the different colors. It was just tremendous. I saw the big birds taking off and flying and all of the beautiful things that you can see down in the Trinity River. I saw that myself personally. I canoed 25 miles. As I pledge to you, I will never do that again. But I encourage each and every one of you to take even a shorter trip to make sure that you go down to that Trinity River. This contest was designed to provide easy and fun and family adventures to showcase the important resources that we have here in Dallas, the Trinity River, the 6,200 acres of the Great Trinity Forest, to provide summer projects for school-aged children and to help photography document the amenities being built here in Dallas. Now, what are the requirements and the rules for the 2014 Trinity River Photo Contest? The photos are taken within the boundaries of the Trinity River Corridor Project, 20 miles and 10,000 acres. There are three divisions, the pro division, the amateur division, the youth division. Pro is anyone who earns most of their income from photography or if they would like to compete in the category. Youth is the children up to 17 years old or if they are a senior in high school. Now, each year the photos taken between January the 1st and October 15th of the contest terms, they are eligible for submission. For the 2014 contest, over 800 photos were submitted. We'd like to see some of those photos around hanging in the walls of City Hall. It is fun to have the competition, so we're looking for the event more submissions in 2015, and we want to reach 1,000 photos in 2015. The judging panel was Michael Hamtel, photo editor of the Dallas Morning News, and this will be his last year on the panel. So, Michael, we want to thank you for serving and your dedication. Now, we appreciate Michael's dedication to this program and his leadership that helps select an excellent collection of photographs year after year. Again, this year, the judges awarded first, second, and third place, as well as honorable mention selections. From the group of first place winners, one grand prize image is awarded. Assistant City Manager Jill Jordan, will you please step up and be my co-partner here to the podium, and we will do the awarding, and we'll talk about it. The awards are $125 for first place, $50 for second place, and $25 for third place. And that's a grand total. Grand prize winner is $500. I'm going to go get me a camera, and I'm going back down. All right, Jill, take it up here.
All right. So, Judy, you want when the winners come up, and you want Mr. Caraway where so you can take the photo?
Right here.
Right here.
Looking
over there.
Looking that way.
Yeah,
all right. All right. So the first person we're going to call up is Susan Bracia or Burciago.
Susan.
She got second place in wildlife and an honorable mention in wildlife. Okay.
When we get all the cancels?
No, we'll do one at the end. We've got a lot of people to call up. All right. Okay. All right. Ben Sandifer, come on up, Ben. He got first and second place in rivers and ponds, first in wildlife, and an honorable mention in forest and prairie. Okay, Tony Palacios.
Come on, Tony.
Forest and prairie, third place. Okay, Manish Azar. He got an honorable mention in architecture and structures.
All right. Congratulations.
Okay. Musako Fujinami.
Musako, all right.
Honorable mention in architecture and structures and forest and prairie. Okay, I'm going to read the other amateur names in case we've missed that you're here. Dennis Fritchie, Mitchell Marks, Ron Henderson, Roberto Ramirez, Rize Christensen, Shelley Vandegrift, Tony Morrison, Siri Sundar, Linda Dyer Kennedy, and Gina Coslow.
Okay.
All right. Okay, now for our pros. David Worthington, and he got a lot. Architecture and structures, first place. Forest, prairie, first and third places. Rivers and ponds, first. And wildlife, second. All right. Jan Dreskin-Haig. Architecture and structures, second place.
Okay.
Okay, Ashley Smith, Forest Prairie, second place, Rivers and Ponds, second place. All right, Rick Turner, Wildlife, first and third, and he got the grand prize.
It's Miss Rick right here.
All right. Now we're going to move to the youth category. Wendy Castaneda.
Wendy.
She got first and third places in architecture and structures and first place in forest and prairie. Robert Coronado.
Come on, Robert.
Second place in architecture and structures, second place in rivers, and second place in wildlife.
All right.
All right. Oscar Sierra.
Oscar.
Wildlife, third place, and an honorable mention in wildlife. Okay. Sienna Scoff.
Sienna.
Honorable mention. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Cassandra Runnels.
Cassandra, come on here. How you doing?
Okay. And Rishi Azar. He got third place in Rivers and Ponds. And then the other winners in the youth category, Emily Henderson, Abby Law, Bailey Manning, Connor Chase, Adam Burkhalter, Victoria Clark, Myrna Leha, and Maggie Herndon. I don't think any of them are here. All right, so we have one additional sponsor, C.H. Tomb Hill. C.H. Tomb Hill, Mike Bastian, thank you for being a sponsor of this. Why don't you come on up? And then I think at this point we need to gather the council with all of the winners and take the big group photo.
Trinity Commons and Beaudry and Mary Kate. We want to thank each and every one of you.
Thank you.
fun. I'm just standing back over there. We can get something from tonight. We just, well, out of my apartment, my replacement is supposed to be announced, but depending upon how far it is before they do it, I may be gone. Because I didn't know. I thought it was only on Congress. I didn't know. They didn't used to do it on anything.
Okay, Madam Secretary.
Good morning.
Good morning.
The and speakers. For the record, the Dallas City Council meeting started
Madam Secretary,
at 9:14.
Before you start, AC gonna make an announcement, please.
Just a quick announcement. We're trying to get the indications from all the council members about whether or not you're going to be going to Austin this evening. We totally understand if you decide not to go. There's good reason that you would have for not going. But for those that still want to make the plans to go, we'd like to get some read on that. Just we left you with the latest weather report, so you can look it over for yourself, but some other things that are going on. We have, it looks like, already four council members that are there. We have several staff, including Larry Casto and the chiefs. You should know that in Austin they have South by Southwest is going on, so if we're kept in Austin, it's going to be looking very grim in terms of getting a place to stay. So anyway, not trying to talk anybody out of anything, but just want to make sure that you're well informed when you put your indication of whether or not you're going or not. Thank you. If you would fill out, we passed you a little sheet there that has something for you to get the indication. If you would pass that up to me or to Lindsay, we'll collect those and start making adjustments in our plans. Thank you.
Thank you, AC. Madam Secretary.
Thank you. Your morning speakers will be Carl Raines, Michael Waters, Olinka Green, Glenda Aguirre, Yolanda Williams, and John Ting. I'll state the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any speaker making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the City Council shall be removed from the room. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the timer on the monitor. When your time is up, please stop and address all comments to Mayor Atkins. Also, if you have any handouts, please hand it to the security as it will count against your time. Your first speaker, Carl Raines.
Good morning. My name is Carl Raines. I live at 1445 Waterside Drive in Dallas, Texas here. Good morning, Mayor Pro Tem Atkins and City Council. For the last 20 years, I've been with the Southeast Dallas Chamber as their Chamber of Commerce chairman. During that tour, there's been a lot of discussion about the Trinity Parkway. Since 1998, the Trinity Parkway has had extensive public discussions. It was understood to be a parkway that would be a reliever route for the congestion that we see daily on Interstate 30, 35, which is just a few blocks away. It is proposed to carry 100,000 vehicles per day and be a toll road with a speed of 55 miles an hour, which has been approved by the voters twice. This intersection of 35 and 30 is seen as one of the most congested in the nation. This afternoon, you'll want to avoid this area like a plague, and probably tomorrow also. Studies by the best recommend that the toll road between the levees as the most practicable solution, primarily because building the road on the land that the city currently owns is much less expensive than double-decking Stemmons and taking 288 properties away from the riverfront. Both the double-decking and the widening would hurt economic development, which is something that we don't want to do. The vision plan approved by the City Council includes a 55-mile-per-hour toll road that is six lanes from Highway 183 to downtown and four lanes as it goes south. This issue has been subject of many public meetings, studies, and elections. Studies continue to show that many people live in the south and work in the northern portion of the city. As a city, it is in our best interest that the folks that live in the south be able to get to work, especially when they work in North Dallas. If you want to use the toll road every day, that would be your decision to do that. Building the road will fit right into growing a more vibrant economy for families that live in the southern section of Dallas, and that's something that I think most people are committed to doing here. In closing, remember back in the 80s when DART started talking about light rail that would go to all parts of Dallas, and many thought it was a pipe dream? Think about what this light rail means now to the economic impact of the city of Dallas and the surrounding communities. The Trinity Plan will have the same impact when it is completed. You'll sit there and you'll say, I don't know what we'd do without this. So I'm in support of the Trinity Plan, as many people that I know in the community, and I speak for myself today, but I bring you the message from a lot of people out there that it's a good idea. Let's get together and make it a reality. And in closing, I want to thank the city council folks, Mr. Caraway, Mr. Hill, Ms. Atkins, Ms. Davis, for all their support that they've given me over the years in the southeast section of District 5, where Mr. Callahan is now. And thank you, Mr. Callahan, for all that you do for us in the southeast area of District 5. Thank you, and have a good afternoon.
Your next speaker, Michael Waters. Mr. Waters will be followed by Olinka Green, Glenda Agide, and Yolanda Williams.
To Mayor Pro Tem Atkins and our esteemed City Council, my name is Dr. Michael W. Waters. I'm joined today in the room by Attorney Emmanuel Obi and Mr. Jason Reddick. I'm speaking to you today on behalf of a newly formed organization in Dallas, the Sankofa Coalition. As an organization, we believe that racial healing must be based on a recognition of and atonement for certain past historical injustices. We believe that this is a critical first step toward building the solidarity needed to address contemporary instances of such injustice. There are two horrific tragedies of the 20th century that have long defined our city. Many recall with ease the infamous day in 1963 where bullets failed a sitting president. Many more have no recollection of the lynching of Dallasite Alan Brooks. On March the 3rd, 1910, 105 years ago yesterday, a lynch mob seized Mr. Brooks as he appeared in a courtroom at the county courthouse. A noose was fastened around his neck, and Mr. Brooks was thrown headfirst out of a second-floor window. His skull soon crashed upon the ground below. The mob below viciously attacked Mr. Brooks and then dragged him half a mile from the courthouse to the corner of Main and Ackert Street beneath the Elks Arch. The friction between Mr. Brooks' body and the ground ripped away his clothes, disrobing him. At Main and Ackert, before an estimated crowd of 3,000, including young children, Mr. Brooks was lynched. As he hung by his neck from a light pole, remaining fragments of his clothes were torn from his body by onlookers as souvenirs. Even after he was cut down, his body had to be quickly ushered out of the city as the mob wanted to burn it. How is it that Brooks's death came to define our city? It is because we made it so. A picture of Brooks' lynching was popularized as a postcard and sent out from Dallas throughout the world. In a February 10, 2015 New York Times article on the history of lynching in the South, news of Brooks's lynching again went throughout the world as it was a lead-in story regarding the brutalities of lynching within our nation. Now, no one can change the past. However, we can choose to remember the past so that we might embrace better futures. There is need to remember Brooks's death and how it was used to define our city, and in order to embrace it, a new and better city. Therefore, we as members of the Sankofa Coalition are calling upon you, our city council, to place a historical marker noting the lynching of Alan Brooks at the site of his death at the corner of Main and Ackert Street. As John Henry Clark once stated, history is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is a compass that they use to find themselves on the map of human geography. It tells them where they are, but most importantly, tells them where they must be. For the healing of our city from its present and historical racial wounds and become the great city we have the capacity to become, let us as a city acknowledge this defining tragedy, repent, and then erect a memorial to remember so that we might never pass this way again. Thank you for your time.
Your next speaker.
Mr. Caraway.
Thank you, Mayor. And Mr. Waters, thank you for stepping up to the plate. Number one, I'm a Dallasite, born and raised here, born at the old Parkland Hospital. I'm ashamed to say, but I am going to say, that I've not heard of this story. And I need more to hear more, okay? So I was just speaking with my colleague, Mr. Kingston. Both he and I would like to take an opportunity to set up the time to visit with you so we can talk about the very things that you've presented here today. I appreciate hearing what it is, but I want to learn even more. And then after that, let's move forward in trying to reach and accomplish some of those goals.
Thank you. We'll be delighted to share. Thank you very much.
Ms. Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. There is a book called The Lynching, and I have a copy of that book, Mr. Caraway. Okay. And Mr. Brooke is in that book, hanging in downtown Maine on the center square with his legs, eyes, ears, body burnt to no end. And so I really want to thank you for bringing that to our city's attention of the lynching that was here in Dallas, more than one.
Yes.
More than one. And the book has lynching all over the South. Dallas had a lot more than others, but was not recognized. And there are buildings here in Dallas that have white only still engraved in it. But that's our history, that's our past, and but I do appreciate you coming down and recognizing that, and hoping that we can perhaps talk about that and to deal with the conversation of recognizing he was the worst one of all the lynching, were his body, besides the other young man, the 13-year-old, who was beaten and killed for supposedly whistling at someone. So thank you so much, and I do have the book, and the book is on Amazon.com. Emma Roger at she used to have the book when she had her bookstore. That's where I bought it from years ago, and so I still have it a part of my book collection. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Secretary.
Your next speaker is Olinka Green.
Good morning. I hope everybody can hear me. My name is Olinka Green. I reside at 2522 Wilhurd Avenue, and I'm here today to talk about environmental injustice. I brought some photos to show about what's going on in my neighborhood. Councilman Caraway is my representative. And so I took these photos to just show the dumping, advocating for illegal dumping signs in my community, and these are just some of the things that I've taken, so y'all just bear with me. I'm getting used to this new technology.
Joseph, we go help her?
The first picture you want to see is Garrison Avenue. This is leading to my community. It's just been named Oak Hill Gardens. We had some new Habitat Humanity homes built in this community, so I just want y'all to come see when the journey starts. This is what I'm looking at every morning when I walk down my street. This has been here for the past 3 weeks, and that's what's happening in my area, in my neighborhood. View, again, to let everybody know, this is mattresses and debris and garbage that's just been laying there. And like I said, we had these new Habitat homes, and so If people are coming through this community to get homes, this is what they have to see. The next car wash across the street from W.W. Bushman High Elementary School. And the reason that this is so relevant is because as I was walking through there, I encountered these holes, and children walk through there from school, and these holes are very, very deep. And if a child's body fall off in there, you're not going to be able to find it. Thank you, Joseph. This is the other hole that's there as you walk through the through my community. And these don't have no covers or anything. And so this is what's going on at this car wash that's just there. Let me take it down. And this is some of the graffiti that I'm encountering in my community. Other things like that. I'm going to show some other pictures. Crackheads go off in here and smoke drugs in this. And so we have children that are coming from Bushman walking home and to and from this area. So the next photo I want to show you is what I actually found one of these people doing in this community. This is one of the people that I was telling you about that's behind the car wash that I just got through showing you. He's actually smoking crack, and he wanted me to show the picture of what he's doing so we could get an emphasis on what's happening in the community.
Hey, Bill.
Oops, sorry. Kind of nervous. But this is also the creek at J.J. Lemon Park, which is also in my area. It used to have minnows and fish and crawdads in it, and now it's full of debris, junk, and tires, and you can't even get down off in there. So what I'm really saying is that what my community is facing, I'm facing environmental injustice. This is an environmental bad, and I'm pushing for an environmental good. I would hope that Councilman Caraway would really look at this because this is in his district. Our children are passing this every day, future homeowners, and if we're talking about economic power and bringing up the southern sector, then we have to really, really address these issues. So I appreciate you, and I thank you for letting me bring my small presentation today to City Council.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Caraway.
Thank you, and don't go nowhere. Joy, you get on to the other microphone. All right. Let's get over here.
Oh, I have some more pictures on my tablet. I just knew that I didn't have enough time to show abandoned homes and different things like that. So if y'all want to see that later on, y'all can.
We got you. Thank you. Thank you. Just stay right there. Now, Joey, put that picture back up, Ms. Green.
Which one?
On the hose.
Yes, sir.
When you first started saying that, I was so glad it was.
This one?
Oh.
And
that's
then
fine.
I can do this
any
right
of those
there.
Type pictures. Put those up, and then
okay.
I want to see the dumping pictures.
Okay.
Number one, Joy, what have we done about the illegal? Put the dumping picture up first.
Okay.
Put the dumping up.
This one here?
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Okay.
With all the, that's
right
there. Number one, let me say the community, Ms. Green.
Yes, sir.
Is not the ones that are living like this, the people that live in this area.
Yes, sir.
These are people that are coming in here with some trash and illegally throwing it out.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, that's number one. And we have this all over the district in certain areas. We had another case that was worse than this that we brought before the city council over off of Ann Arbor in that area. Now, so what I want first you to understand and it is the responsibility of folks such as yourself to come and make these complaints and these concerns.
Thank you,
and
sir.
That's what you're doing, so that's good. Now, to Joy, when this takes place, then things as egregious as this, we need to immediately do something about it, okay? More importantly, in our quality of life meetings and other meetings, we need to address as a council ways of better enforcing catching these illegal dumpers. If this is an area, Ms. Green,
yes, sir,
that has a continued history of dumping in this particular spot, then we need to put up temporary cameras and make sure that we are at least doing everything that we possibly can to catch these people, get their license plate,
catch him in the middle of the act. I've caught him in the middle of the act, and I've called a city marshal. Dial 911 when you see it. I encourage you, don't just dial 311. Dial 911 when you see a bum out dumping something, throwing something out the window, emptying a truck. Dial 911 and report them immediately, and then let's get the city marshal to get out and to arrest those people. And I'm using the fact of arrests, okay? So now, what's our status in cleaning this up? Is it still there today, Ms. Green?
Yes, sir. It was there when I passed by there this morning.
It won't be there this afternoon.
Well, and Councilman, yesterday when Ms. Green came to your offices and alerted us to these, we did send code inspectors out. We have visited each of these sites,
okay,
and we've taken appropriate action. And in some of these okay. cases, if we have good notice on them, where we've previously given the owner notice that they have a litter problem, we'll be able to pick it up quickly. And okay. for those that, where we didn't have prior notice to the owners, we've issued notice.
Okay.
Give them an opportunity to fix it. If they don't, then our crews come and fix it, and we put a lien on the property.
Okay. Regardless of where this is, and I do know that we do things as relate to a water bill and all that kind of stuff, forget that. Let's get over that today. Ms. Green,
yes,
you call
sir.
Me by 5 o'clock this afternoon.
Okay.
And it'll be gone.
Okay.
Now, either we're going to go get it or I'm going to go get it.
Okay.
And that's the worst one to have out there with me in the rain is getting it.
Yes, sir.
Because
and my
if
other
I have
concern.
To go get it, somebody else is going to get it.
Yes, sir. And the other one you wanted to see was this right here. This was my big concern about the children okay. walking
now,
through that
hold
car
on,
wash.
Hold on to that. Hold on to that now. You, okay. You're right. Keep put that other picture up with several holes on it.
Okay.
Now, with the holes out here, that's a safety. That's public safety. That's public safety. That's safety. Quality of life, public safety. Whatever it is we need to have, these holes will be covered up today. Even if they're covered up temporarily okay. with something over them that will be where these folks cannot do it until we get the right thing to do it. These holes, Ms. Green, will be covered up today.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to be going by there because I'm not going to Austin. So since I'm not going to Austin, I'm going to work out in the community, and I'm going to go over there and check it out and see. So we're going to do all this today. Joey's a great guy. He's doing it great, okay?
Right.
So he's going to do everything we just asked.
Okay.
Okay?
All right. And like I said, I have the other pictures on my tablet of other things that I couldn't get on here, but I have some worse pictures of some abandoned houses with wood and nails and debris okay. all in front of it, but I couldn't get the tablet. So I'll show you that also. So, and I have the addresses of that because these are really bad sites. And like I said, with the crackhead, different folks like that, they're staying off in there. You have children, you have elderly people walking by there, and that is a safety concern when you're walking by there at night. You don't know what's going on.
Right.
So
right.
Okay,
we got you.
Give you
well,
away
thank
from
you.
Me.
Thank you so very much, Ms. Green. Enjoy.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And I was going to just ask Ms. Green if she would wait for me. I do want to visit with you afterwards and make sure we have
cool
all the locations.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. Thank you.
Ms. Davis.
Ms. Davis.
Can Mark come up? Mark, come up to the front. Because, see, this is not only a cold, but this is a sanitation issue, too, Mr. Caraway.
Okay.
And because, you know, in my district, I have some problems. They're not as bad as they used to be, but I still have some issues. One of the things I think, Mark and Joe, you guys talk about, what I saw is that is someone's property that is cut and mowed. That property is maintained and it's been taken care of. Somebody has come and dumped on that person's property. You just said, Joey, that you guys are going to call that owner. He have to have the responsibility of paying someone that has dumped on his property. I think that is so unfair, and when you and I continue to talk about that, if they're taking care of their property. So that person shouldn't have to do that, I don't think, in my opinion, because you look at the picture, he clearly has taken care of his responsibility.
Well, and that's part of the discussion. And Ms. Davis, there was more than that one property in particular. You may be right. It may be illegal dumping, and we do work with the marshal's office wherever we identify something to be illegal dumping. But there, she's actually given us, I want to say, at least six sites that had litter.
Well, I didn't
litter.
See those six. I
no,
just saw that
but
one.
I'm referring, my comments were in response to all the sites, not just that one that was
they're
up there. But
the
you're
tablet.
Right.
Okay. Now, Mark, let me ask you this. How often... When dumping happens, how do you get notified on the dumping?
We work hand in hand with Joey's and Chris, and you know we're going through the neighborhoods on a weekly basis, right? And not just with large trash pickup, but also regular garbage pickup. So we're able to see and identify some of this, and then coordinate with them. But
It is an ongoing process.
When you say coordinate with them, is it Cole responsibility to pick up the dumping, or is it a Cole problem where then you come in and pick up the dumping?
It's primarily a code issue, okay. But we do support them in doing, you know, hot shot pickups or just coordinating the whole overall service.
Okay, so it's really a code problem, and then Joy gets with you to deal with picking up the dumping.
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Okay. Davis, I want to say this. Last summer at my bus stop, I catch a 538. I was walking down the street, and somebody came through the community and dumped 500 bloody syringes right there in front of my bus stop. And just so happened, when I had called the police, just so happened code enforcement was coming around the corner from looking at something else. So that's what they're dumping in my community. I mean, I've come across the big light bulbs, you know, the okay. big old light bulbs, and they continue, and I have a notorious dumping site. But like I said, it's on the tablet where people come. Last summer, I found at least 4 dead pit bulls that had been chained up to a chain.
So Ms. Green, so what? Yeah. Well, Mr. Caraway is going to work with you to okay. focus on that. I do know that. I'm just trying to just get some understanding that the dumping is really not a sanitation issue. It's more on a coal issue than sanitation work with you guys to get it up.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much, y'all.
Next speaker.
Your next speaker is Glenda Aguita.
Rick Halliday.
Yeah, just wanted to make a few comments. I also want to chime in on this. Now, this is really a horrible, critical problem, not only in my district, but also I know my surrounding districts, which are, you know, Ms. Davis and also Mayor Pro Tem Atkins there in the southeast Pleasant Grove area. And we have got to get a handle on this. I know the Marshal Service is working. I know there's been a number of cameras that's been installed in our area, but this just continues to be a problem. Some of it's people putting out their bulk trash, you know, either way before the pickup time or way after. I just 2 days ago convened a group of people, staff, to try to find a comprehensive, holistic way to go after the litter through the schools, through the churches, through our neighborhood organizations, and so forth. But we've got to do something about that. Particularly a problem. Also, these manhole covers are still, you know, the recyclers are stealing them as fast, and they're dangerous because if you're walking along to your bus route or whatever, or to school, you could just step right in there, and some of these holes are very deep. I believe there is a new composite material thing that you can actually buy these replacements, so I'd advocate replacing as quickly as possible. I turn these in pretty routinely, but those are, it looks bad, but as well, it's also, you know, a critical problem for people to step in. But also our residents, they deserve more support, and I totally agree with Ms. Davis. You know, a lot of people are victims of this, and to just say the city say, well, it's on your lot, your property, yeah, you got to handle it, that's the way it is, I don't think that's fair. I think, again, I've called for clean teams or clean attack teams, whatever you want to call it, to come out and be on the lookout for illegal dumping, particularly in areas that we know it's going to occur repeatedly, and to work with the homeowners groups, churches, and other organizations to try to somehow rid this problem. I have an area where there's a lot of construction contractors, and rather than going to the McComas Bluff, you know, landfill, which is maybe a 20-minute drive, they just it's easier for them to just go to a kind of a vacant lot or maybe a street that's less traveled and just dump it off. Even as a commercial real estate broker, property manager, a lot of the people, they come into our dumpsters, their private property, and fill our dumpsters up, and then they surround our dumpsters with a lot of extra debris. This is almost a weekly problem that I have to deal with, and it's real hard to catch them, I know, but we've just got to develop a strategy to try to deal with this. Thank you.
Thank you, Rick and Carolyn. You know, I had some major concern with illegal dumping. You know, I look at my district and look at 56 square mile of territory that we got to cover just in District 8. And I enjoy it. When you come to the mic, Joy, my concern that is, number one, we keep talking about the marshal. You know, we said the marshal is in charge of it. How many marshals do we have?
They just walked out of the room, but I can get you a number.
And the marshal is not just worrying about illegal dumping. You know, they have other responsibility to do. And my point is, number one, let's kind of get it straight, that we put a whole lot of pressure on the marshals. The marshal cannot police all this illegal dumping. And is that a marshal representative right there?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Kevin, come forward, please.
Yes, sir.
How many marshals do you have?
There are 11 FTEs in the, marshal's office for illegal dumping.
And those marshals cover the entire city of Dallas, right?
Yes, sir.
And if you look at District 8, you know, over at J.J. Lemon, you know, Tioga, Silver Hill, I can name a whole lot over there off of University Hill. There's no way that you can police all that with 11 marshals. And also, you're responsible for the Trinity.
Right.
And so, AC, this becomes a budget question, that how do you attack, Carolyn? You know, that we are trying to worry about the marshal, we're trying to worry who's going to take care of the problem. We got residents who own property and who you get a citation to, but then, too, you still got residents that say, it's not my trash, it's someone else's trash, they got to prove up to us. So this is a problem we've been facing for the last 8 years that I've been here, and I don't know how we police this and how do we correct this. It's a serious problem. It's going to keep going on and on, AC, unless we figure out it's a budget item. It's a short of manpower to do this. If you got any suggestion going forward in our budget that this is just like a loose dolls. I mean, it's the same problem we had constantly, people calling in that we got trash there today, but we can't pick it up. We got to notify someone who got their yard maintained, manicured, and cut grass, and you got to come back and say, I can't get it today, but you got to pick it up. So something is wrong with this picture.
We have spoken about it as a group, both council and staff, on several occasions. It is a budget issue. It is also an issue and a challenge for all of us to see how we can work smarter to use whatever resources we can most effectively. There's been, through cameras, some other technology, the working with the community, working with other city departments, ways in which we have improved on our effectiveness. I think the department has shown that we've actually made greater impact. But at the end of the day, you can only do so much with whatever resources you have, and we'll be coming back with you on some suggestions on both ways of working smarter, but maybe also needing more resources.
Mr. Gaudet.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I got a question. If I've got a piece of property, I keep it mowed, I keep it cleaned, and then all of a sudden one day I come by and there's a bunch of trash on it, just like we saw up there. So I call code and tell them there's somebody dumped trash on my property and ask you to please get it. Do I get charged for that?
Yes.
Correct. Why? It's been illegally dumped on my property, and you're going to charge the landowner
the options
for that?
Well, and Councilman, let me be clear that if someone calls us up and wants us to remove something, whether it's illegally dumped or an out-of-service brush bulk trash collection, there is the cost plus option. So there is an option for somebody to tell us, and we'll give them an estimate. Sanitation will give them an estimate and tell them exactly what it's going to cost.
Okay, what if I don't call you?
If say a neighbor calls us and says, hey, this property is getting dumped on, that's the purpose of us giving notice to the owner, so that the owner can contact us and tell us what's going on and work with us, and then we can refer them to either cost plus or find some other way to fix this. So that's why we want to give notice, so that people will talk to us.
So then you're still going to give the owner notice, you got dumped on, get rid of it. We're not picking it up.
Ultimately, the property owner is responsible for the maintenance of their property.
Are we going to charge you to pick it up?
Yes,
right?
Sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Is that legal?
No, well, it shouldn't be.
It shouldn't be, but it is.
I mean,
hey, so you about to say something?
Well, try not.
Try not to.
I think those individuals are correctly characterized as victims, and I think all victims of crime, sometimes or most of the time, you end up paying for other people's criminal behavior, whether or not it's vandalism, whether or not it's all of us theft, etc. You end up as a victim being paid for, paying the consequences for somebody else's criminal actions. Now, for us as the city to take on the responsibility for repairing anything that might be out there in terms of what happens to victims, then we take on a responsibility that is unimaginable. Now, there are things that we can do to try to help, and we do, and we will look in the future, but everybody's responsibility as an owner is to be an owner when whether or not good things are happening to them or bad.
You through, Chef?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Carraway, second
you.
Round.
Thank you, thank you. Chef, yeah, I understand exactly what you're saying. I'm listening to AC. But now, if I don't like somebody, I can just simply cause them some grief, and I can go and dump a bunch of stuff right in front of Jennifer's house. I like you, Jennifer. I'm just using that example. But you know, somebody can come and just dump a bunch of stuff out there, and she has to pay the bill. You know, and I don't think that that's fair. That's number one. I think that we need to do, and I understand exactly what our city manager is saying, but I think that what we need to do is figure out how we can strengthen the enforcement on illegal dumping. Okay? And Sheffy, that's something that we just have to understand, because what they're saying and the pickle that we're into is that it's the property owner's responsibility. That's the way it is written. I understand that. But we're going to have to tweak this ordinance to some degree that will give the property owner that is the victim some form of relief or some way to not circumvent, but to not have to, you know, take on the responsibility of paying. It could be a senior citizen that's bedridden and it's their property and they are taken advantage of, and then we, the city, we put a lien on their property because of the illegal dumping that they had absolutely nothing to do with. So we got to figure out a better way to define exactly what is happening and a stronger enforcement. And that's something they see from a management perspective. We need to figure out what we can do. It means more cameras.
Mr. Carraway.
What?
Could we do this? Are you at your quarter of life?
Well, I bring it straight to my committee.
We'll bring it to your committee and talk about it and see some strategy. Because I think this, I think this is something we need to bring up with the budget, because it's a budget deal. I think we need to get on the radar right away.
All right, we'll do it, and let's do this right away. And then when you come with solutions. Don't come with no presentation. I don't even know nothing about they do this, they do that, they do this. Come with how we're going to stop it. Come with enforcement when you bring the quality of life, okay? All right.
Thank you. I'll get Jennifer for you can round two, Carolyn. Ms. Gay.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think that's a great idea. I think quality of life needs to take this up, because this is deplorable to what Mrs. Green has seen in her neighborhood. But I do think we have to weigh, when we start not making people responsible for their own properties, if people then decide to not be honest and put things out and then call and say they were illegally dumped, we could have ourselves a big issue. So there's got to be a balance, but thank you for bringing that forward and bringing that to our attention. And I know your council member is going to work with you to help find a solution. So
that's all right. Please, that'll finish talking. Thank you. Okay, Ms. Davis.
Let me say this. I don't think people dump on their own property. I think people put out things on their property when the time it is for them to put it out. That's what I have experienced, especially when they're cutting it and keeping it clean. That's just a fact. But as we go through this, back in the late 80s when, you know, the dogs were going through the trash, we had came up with trying to find ways of how to deal with when you just put the trash in the plastic bag and put it out on the curb. Now we have those little containers where you can put the trash in, and now we fix that problem. One of the things they see, is there perhaps a way that we can put containers out in certain areas of the district and call them dumping container, trash attack, dumping containers, where people can just dump things in and then this container can be picked up. Is it a problem because it'll go on, it's on the street or private property?
There's been different forms of that. Sometimes they're associated with events that take place and people are encouraged at certain times. If it's spring cleanup or the like, it's done then. You have another form of it with recycling, or it used to be popular about having at school sites or whatever, some of those areas.
I'm just asking, that's some option. We got to come up with some options.
And I think this whole notion of looking more creatively about other solutions, that might be something to take up as far as another avenue. There's always a tendency to any sort of solution like that, there's going to be another side to it as far as where those sites are selected, et cetera, but we'll look at it.
And then the other thing, I know we have the property that we own where sanitation, where is that at where they dump, where they take the trash? It's in Mr. Atkins' district.
We have several transfer stations where people can take items, but they're one of the things that Kelly and I are looking at right now are more locations, just like you have suggested.
Well, if they can take, if we might have a day, one day out of a month or something, where a person can take their bed, their couch, that's what we see, couches, mattress, big things, where they have just dumped on vacant lots. If we can have like a one day something where everybody can take that there for one day only, where they're not charged a fee or something. I agree with Ms. Carroll. We got to come up with some solution of looking at some other places or things that we can do to help those individuals out from dumping.
Yeah, this is part of that whole discussion about bulk trash and brush that, mm-hmm. that we're looking at various options, and this is all part of that, the idea that you would have more drop-off centers. And the idea that if we're picking up large trash every week, every month, then we always have trash on the curb. Mm-hmm. And it encourages others, I think, to come into our community, into the city of Dallas, and dump in the city of Dallas.
So you think some of this is on the outside of our city?
We do, yes.
So people, are you able to talk to those other individuals on the outside of our city, their staff or city managers?
No, ma'am. We haven't gone to that extent, but I'm sure code has some idea about kind of where some of this is coming from as well. And so we're putting our heads together about what makes the most sense.
So I agree with you. Some of it's coming from the outside of our city when it comes to the dumping. Okay, then I'll just wait till Mr. Carraway have his meeting with Quality of Life. Thank you,
Ms. Grayson.
Thank you. I had a question about the transfer stations, and I had neighbors that took trash to the transfer station. They tried Bachman and Fair Oaks and weren't allowed to drop it off and had to drive all the way to the McComas landfill. Is there any particular time or day or something where you're precluded from bringing your bulk trash?
There shouldn't be. They have their regular operating hours, and I'd like to know more about that particular incident.
Okay,
so
because
we can follow
that's
up.
A long drive down there from Far North Dallas.
Sure.
And he made it.
Sure.
And he went down there and got rid of it, but it would have been so much better if
yeah.
he could have done it at Bachman.
Unless there was an operational issue going on or something of that nature. But
okay, I'll find out more about it and let you know. And also, I wanted to give you all a shout-out. My bulk trash was picked up yesterday, and it was so exciting. It was so much earlier than usual. Congratulations for
Kelly.
Doing it, but that doesn't mean that the problem is solved. No. We still need to talk about it. But thank you for getting it like 4 or 5 days early.
Okay, Jerry Allen.
It seems like we do have policies, procedures, times in place already for picking up bulk trash for the people that follow the rules. So when we come to budget or quality of life, the challenge is that bulk trash. Last time I checked, it didn't have legs on it, didn't have wings. Somebody had to, some idiot had to take it out and put it there. Behavioral control. And at some point in time, as we talk about it and we can do all these things, but it is behavioral control. So any type of enforcement, any type of fines, that might help with behavioral control at the end of the day, because that trash got there by folks that just do not care. They do not care, and they ought to pay a price for not caring. So that's my two cents.
Mr. Carroway,
last one.
Okay, we're going to your quarter of life with this, right?
Yeah, we're going to go. This is the last brief, one, Mr. Mayor.
Brief, okay.
All right, very brief. Jerry, you're right on target. And let me say, let's stop skirting around the issue. I think putting more reciprocals out and around for people to go is only encouraging dumping. Okay, it's not necessarily encouraging. They know what to do. These people are violators.
They are going down Arrow Road and other areas such as Garrison and other places, and they are breaking the doggone law by rolling down their windows and stopping with their trucks and throwing these toilets and these mattresses out onto people's property. They are breaking the law. Figure out a way for stronger enforcement. Let's catch them, and once they know that they're being caught and they are capable of being caught, because I caught an illegal dumper, I stopped, got his license plate, and he received a $2,000 fine, and at that particular place where he was dumping all the time, it has never been any more dumping. He was the only one that was doing it, okay? So it is enforcement is what we have to do, all right?
Thank you. All right, Madam Secretary, next speaker.
Your next speaker is Glenda Aguirre.
Hi, I'm Glenda Aguirre, and I reside at 2449 Trenton Drive in Mesquite, Texas, and I'm here to support the Trinity Parkway. I think it's really going to help alleviate a lot of the traffic coming in from the southeast area, especially when we're trying to get out to DFW Airport or, you know, something like that. I'm sorry, but 635 and the North Tollways, they're all, you know, jam-packed. So something coming in from the south to help us to get out to that area would really be great. I know I try to avoid Austin traffic just because it's so bad. I'll pay that money to take that 130 toll going around Austin. I'd greatly pay the money to take the tolls, you know, to get from Southeast Dallas up to Irving. It would be just so much better. One of the reasons I retired is I got tired of sitting in the traffic coming in from 30. It's not worth it for me to spend my time and energy and gas sitting in traffic. So I retired because of that. And 175 Dead Man's Curve, it's horrible. The traffic coming in from there, and you've got to just practically stop to turn around that corner. Something that would just keep it going straight through would be great. People will pay that toll just to avoid hitting that curve. So thank you. Anything you guys can do to support this parkway, we really appreciate it.
Your next speaker, Yolanda Williams. Ms. Williams will be followed by John Ting.
Good morning, and apologize for my vote. I've been living in Pleasant Grove for over 46 years, so the Dead Man Curve is something that I have to travel to get here. And my first job at a law firm was in North Dallas, off of North Toll Road. And so I utilize that. My mom lives in DeSoto. She just retired. Her job was 35 years, and she worked off of Plano Parkway. So I had to drive her numerous times. And when I first started, I said, why are you paying this? And she said, because we need to get there twice as fast. Now, mind you, it wasn't my money. So I was taking a cheap route. We had a debate. She said, well, you drive the service road and see how long it's going to take you. So after I drove the service road, stayed in traffic, I picked her up that afternoon, and I said, it's worth it. I said all that to say, everyone talks about growing the South, growing the South, growing the South. I've been hearing that for 25 years. But every time it affects us, we have to come here, we have to beg, we have to fight. The southern sector are tired. Now, I do not speak for all the Pleasant Grove, but I can tell you, 46 years in the community, I do have a voice. Just like when you all wanted the horse park, you wanted the nice Byron Nelson golf course. I live in that Pemberton Hill area, so I had to rally the neighborhood. The people live there. They're all retired. They have nothing to do. So I have to come down here and give them a report. And I mean, just be honest. I understand politics. This is election time. We always get caught in the middle of the Northern and the South during election time. I don't think that's fair to us. I don't think it's fair to me that I did the mileage. I live 10.2 miles away from this building. When it's traffic, it takes me twice as long because there's only one way I can go. I live off of 175. That's Dead Man Curve. The voters, we voted for this twice. Why do we have to fight? Every time it comes to the southern sector, we have to fight, we have to picket. I'm part of this new generation. I'm not going to picket. I'm not like Ms. Diane Ransdale. I respect her. I'm not like Al Liskin. I respect him. You have a new young generation. And we are tired that we have to do this over and over and over again. And this is not about votes. I know you all, you know, everyone is doing a great job. Just like we hear what goes on in the community during election time, we are listening in the southern sector. We are tired. We said we want it. And ask yourself, the reason why some people don't want it, they don't have to drive it. They're not in the all this traffic. So we're asking you all to listen to what the voters want. We voted for this twice. Thank you.
Your final speaker is John Ting.
Doc, you have light on.
Thank you. Just going to say a few comments about this Trinity Toll Road. I live in Southern Dallas and represent Southern Dallas. It is the biggest boondoggle there is. Its cost is over $1.5 billion. We hear it'll relieve congestion, but that's just not the case. COG came out with a study earlier this year showing it's not going to relieve any congestion. That's because there's no direct connection from the Trinity Toll Road to I-30 or I-35. I know those are a mess. And the solution is finishing Project Pegasus. We started the horseshoe. We were told that the horseshoe project couldn't be done without the Trinity Toll Road. So anyone who lives in Southern Dallas or in the North, walk out and look at it. It's under construction today. And we can finish Lower Stemmons. We can make a Southern Gateway that works and do that without tolls. We can finish up I-30. We can fix the transportation problems that we have without this Trinity Toll Road. In Oak Cliff, which I represent, we were told we couldn't have economic development without this Trinity Toll Road. You'll never get it. We've got it today through hard work, and Southern Dallas is growing through hard work. We don't need this Trinity Toll Road. In fact, the opposite will happen if this toll road comes. It will cripple the economic development that we have going on now. They're planning right now to build a five-story.
It's not a debate.
I've got the floor. Five-story.
It's not a debate, Scott.
It's not a debate. You're right.
Right. It's not
but
a
if you want a debate, anyone want a debate, give me a call.
Right, okay. Thank
so
you.
Let me tell you about this five-story interchange they're building through Jefferson. It will cripple the Oak Cliff Gateway, an area that we've spent over 20 years planning. Five-story interchange. If you build that, we can build a big box, a fast food restaurant, and go home. Or we can try to build office buildings, a mixed-use community, and bring true development to the Southern Dallas. We hear about the size of this road. We were told in the Balanced Vision Plan that this road would be small, only four lanes in parts, 185 feet into the Trinity River. We know now from the 2014 EIS, draft EIS that was released, this road will extend 530 feet between the levees. This road is so wide out there between the levees, we have to move the existing Trinity River to accommodate it in parts, a movement that was not foreseen by the Balanced Vision Plan. They say, they talk about the road being only four lanes. This road at its widest part is going to be nine lanes between the levees. In one part, it's going to be 11 lanes, including the flyovers. These flyovers are going to cripple economic development throughout the South in all parts. This is the worst boondoggle imaginable, and it's time to get serious about developing Southern Dallas. Think of what we could do with this money and the opportunity cost. It's over $1.5 billion. Now it would cost the same amount of money to build a road between the levees as it would outside the levees. This thing has been nothing but a sales job based on some watercolors, fancy watercolors. It's time now just to kill this road and to get on with the business of developing Southern Dallas. Let's talk about a plan to bring more housing to Southern Dallas, bring jobs to Southern Dallas. For the next generations, people have been driving north for jobs. It's time to bring the jobs to the South. And so that's why I'm so passionate about this, Councilmember Atkins, because this is one of the biggest decisions that this city's going to make. It's been the biggest boondoggle imaginable. People have had the wool pulled over their eyes several times. And this will be the biggest mistake our city makes in over 100 years if we build this thing and ruin our parkland. And that's why we need to get the facts out there. And that's why I'm going to continue to oppose this. And if anyone does want to have a debate on it, I'm open. People know where to find me. I've debated Mary Soon, debated Craig Holcomb, debated Michael Morris. So let me know. Thank you.
Your final speaker is John Ting.
Mr. Callahan.
Sorry.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor.
Make sure you want to say something?
Yeah. This is not a posted item for deliberation of policy. And so to the extent that you have questions.
Careful.
He got the floor, Kingston, please. Let him speak. Thank you.
To the extent that there are questions of the speakers, that's the type of conversation that is permitted under the Open Meetings Act. But a deliberation about policy is not a posted item currently under the Open Meetings Act.
With all due respect, City Attorney, I think the cat's out of the bag already. You've allowed him to pontificate for 10 minutes. Why didn't you step in before that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, why?
I did step in.
Now? After 10 minutes of that.
You got to let him speak. You let him have 10 minutes on the whole floor. But you got to be able to speak. Anybody who want to speak should speak.
Mr. Callahan, have the mic.
Yeah, you want to speak.
If you think it's a legal question, we can call it executive session.
You got to speak. You can't tell you what to say. You're a council member. You need to go and speak. You can't do that to you.
I'm happy to go into ask for an executive session about it.
No, you need to
go. I think it's patently unfair that we've heard from one side one their viewpoint. We had these kind citizens come down and have their piece, and then all of a sudden we launch into a dramatic, histrionics, a tirade about the other side, the other point of view, and basically muting our point of view. And I have a lot to say about that. I represent 85,000 people in Southeast, coupled also with Ms. Davis and Mayor Pro Tem Tanel Atkins. You know, we represent about 180,000 people, and we're not having our say. So this gets to hit the press. This gets to hit the TV waves. Now you're trying to mute my voice.
You got the mic, Mr. Callahan.
Y'all just said what
I'm going to go ahead and proceed then. Thank you very much. Again, like I represent these folks, and we have a very strong point of view. We've had discussions on this for nearly 30 years, you know. I chaired the Southeast Dallas Chamber of Commerce between 1994 and 1996, and I appreciate Mr. Carl Raines coming down and speaking about that, and also Ms. Glenda Geary. She worked for Councilwoman Von Sill Hill, and also my Park Board Representative Yolanda. We have a lot to say about this, and we will say more later, but the point is we need a reliever for our folks. I don't represent people that live downtown. I represent people that live in a neighborhood. I represent people that live in Pleasant Grove. These people are the craftsmen, the workmen, the builders of Dallas. These people get in vans and trucks and trailers every day, and they travel across the Metroplex to build Dallas. They can't take their bike, they can't walk, and they can't take the DART train. Last time I checked, you can't hook a trailer to a DART bus. We have a right to be able to look at this. I didn't ask for a toll road. I was all for a parkway. If it's going to have to become a toll road, then so be it. But we need this road. Look at the development that's occurred on Dallas North Toll Road. Look at the development that's occurred on George Bush. Look at what's happened in Garland. It's revolutionized that community because of it. We need to have this road built so we can get across Dallas. We're not trying to go downtown. We're trying to get to the Upper Simmons Corridor, DFW, Love Field, other places. Right now, we can't do anything but go into that canyon, and just it causes a delay. These guys are paying high fuel costs because they've got heavy trucks, and they're getting 6-8 miles a gallon just to sit. They're having to leave their families early in the morning. They're having a delay coming back in the evening to their families because they can't get there. And we've waited for this for years. Former Mayor Pro Tem John Evans, he served his community. He was a civil engineer. He was for it. North Texas Commission was for it. L.A. Murr, former Mayor Pro Tem in Pleasant Grove back in the 70s, former transportation chair, chaired many capital bond campaigns. Man's 90 years old. He still believes in that road because we need to traverse the Trinity River. I'll have more to say later. Thank you.
Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to speak to the question of people having voted for this twice. it's a pack of lies. It's an absolute pack of lies. You can see the 10 former presidents of the local Dallas AIA have dismantled that argument in its entirety. The road as currently proposed bears no resemblance to what was sold to the voters. It's absolutely, completely different. And the COG's own numbers show that it doesn't have an appreciable effect on congestion. You have to dig into the details on this, but once you do, it becomes patently obvious that this road is a boondoggle pushed by a very secretive group of special interests. Who are these folks? Who's going to benefit from this? They're not willing to debate. They're not willing to let me sit in a meeting of the Dallas Breakfast Group to even hear their side of the argument. It was so scary to have me there, they had me thrown the heck out. Every meeting I've been to since then, somebody has jokingly tried to throw me out, which is a really funny joke. But seriously, that's all you really need to know about this. You have people who are willing to talk about this in the daylight, people who are willing to debate, people who are willing to talk about the actual facts of the project. And then you have a bunch of freaking toll road zombies hiding in the dark, trying to build this road for people who will not show themselves. This is the worst sort of perversion of our system of government. This ought to be a really transparent, open process, and instead it has been dominated by people who don't live in the city of Dallas and who are doing this to enrich themselves. You got to dig into this. You don't want to wind up being an unwitting enabler for these people. If you want to look at development, if you want to look at how roads affect development, I would submit that I-45 is a much closer approximation to this proposal. You tell me if those neighborhoods around I-45 think that that's such an awesome idea now. You tell me what sort of development that road has brought. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And I'm not going to be long on this. I can say that with Dead Man's Curve and SM Wright at Gray and the extension of 45 going into the Trinity Parkway, we've been working on this for now about 13 years. And we had many, 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 many community meetings. No one, I can say, city staff was there, TxDOT was there, NTTA was at all of those meetings. Before I got on the council, we had meetings. There was hundreds and hundreds of people who came out to our, at least in my area. We had sometime 80 people, we had 90 people, we had 50 people, we had 60 people. We walked door to door. It was very well informed about what was going on with the Trinity Parkway. Now, for Dead Man's Curve, SM Wright, 45, people are excited about what's going to happen in that area. That area has been just closed off for so, so long. Now that we're going to open it up, it will bring some more, I believe, economic development to that area. I truly, truly, truly believe that. We met at several churches. We've met at St. Philip. We met all throughout that district. So nothing has never been taken away from us as if someone was trying to do something under the table. Did everybody agree at those meetings? No, everybody did not agree at the meeting. We asked tough questions. We asked everything that we could think of in those meetings. I've been working on this for 13 years. And in some of those meetings, I just kind of pulled myself out and let other people participate. So let me make it very clear. It was never anything thrown a pack of lies to that community. We knew exactly what we wanted. We designed what we wanted. The community designed what we wanted. We said what we wanted. So it was never, never just like, well, they came in and they just gave us these bunch of lies and they did it. No, that is not true. If it was wrong, I would not stand for it. But at the end of the day, when that development happened, at least in the community in which I serve and live, we are going to be better off now than we was 50 years ago. It is unheard of where you split a neighborhood down the middle. You got a dead man's curve that needs fixing. And to tell me as a council member, well, you don't need it. You'll still get some more economic development. I can't buy that. I will not buy that. I will not buy that. It is going to help the southern half of our city. This, at the end of the day, is about a toll. Do you want it or do you not? That's what it is about. I voted on it three times. Three. And we won all three times. So now at the end of the day, then I think Mr. Mayor and City Manager, we just need to have another debate with the full council, bring everybody back in, and let everybody just talk about it. But it is going to do my district a great deal of enhancement. And I'm just thank God that it's paid for it. We done found all the money. And then the SM Right Jobs Program. I was able to create a jobs program out of this whole transportation. Unheard of. In 50 years, that community has suffered. And now that we got a jobs program where we're trying to hire people for transportation and to learn transportation, I think that's a plus. So I just cannot say it's needed in the community in which I serve. And Mr. Mayor, I'll be finished. We've had several meetings. We have copies of all the meetings. We have sign-in sheets of all the meetings. It's on tape of all the meetings. All the speakers, and not one time did anybody tell us other than they let us make the final decision if we wanted to do this or not. No one told us, well, you better do it. We made the final decision if we wanted to do what we're doing in that community. And I mean, we just need to pull the tapes. I haven't heard anything other than letting us, the community, make the final decision on what we wanted, a part of Dead Man's Curve, SM Right, and 45 that goes all the way into the Trinity Parkway. That's what I know at the end of the day. So I haven't heard anything else that someone was trying to undercut us, do something different, or give us some things that didn't work. We, the community, we decided what we wanted for that community. And I just have to put that out there. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Ms. Allen, please.
Yeah, I just want to thank speakers for coming down and speaking, and particularly, you know, standing up with passion and talking about your communities and stuff. To me, one of the things I realized about being on the Dallas City Council and representing all of Dallas, but also representing my district, I realized that the resources are very limited. Total resources are limited. I'll say it again, resources are limited. So this conversation, while I've always been in favor of the conversation, I've been in favor of the particularly bringing in all of the entrepreneurs that are out there, trying to work with them to make the Trinity Project the very best there is, not fighting them, but working with them, because I know the resources. I'm not a rich man. I don't have money in my billfold to help these projects. So I have to bring in and work with people that have that resources instead of alienating them. The other side, I always hear about the North and the South. And the North has this, South doesn't have that. Well, the reality is, if I was really selfish, and didn't care about this city, then I would probably just kind of lay back and let this fight continue on for the years to come. Because, again, resources are limited. I would sit there and embrace, as we have over at the LBJ North expansion, which is now a very beautiful expansion for LBJ. A lot of traffic, yes. But we put up with the dirt, the construction, and we're reaping the benefits of that. And guess what? All this conversation about these other things, well, we're going to get eventually what's called LBJ East. We're going to continue that into a very beautiful road that will have entryways that go off into neighborhoods that will benefit other communities, Garland, Mesquite, the rest of them. Resources are limited. So if I was selfish, I would really just kind of lay back and say, y'all fight it out and keep this thing going. Don't do anything. Stay on the sidelines. Fight among yourselves. Never do anything because nothing will ever be accomplished. But that is such a neat, neat area, that area. And eventually, folks will come to work with the true leaders in this city that can turn that into such a jewel. And I look forward to maybe in my lifetime, I'm 65, maybe in my lifetime that will happen. Yeah. So thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, Mr. Cadane.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just got to say this was voted on twice. So people had two chances to vote it down, and they didn't. So it was approved by over 50%. And I don't appreciate my colleague calling these folks zombies. They're not zombies. And that's the way attorneys try to turn things, is by using words. These were not zombies that made this approval. And it's a good move. We need this road. We need it to get through the 30 and 35 there. And it's been needed for a long, long time. So I've just got to say this is good. We need to move it forward and be done with it. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Sheffy. Thank you, Scott, Kings, and everyone there. You know, we always talk about north and south, and sometimes we forget about east and west. And we look at our city today, and it is kind of divided east and west. You look at downtown, you look at the beautiful thing on the west of downtown Dallas. What about the east side of downtown Dallas? You look at the Fair Point, you look at the Horseport coming, you look at AT&T Golf Course. But you also look at 635, Jerry, you know, 635 East, you look at 30, and you look at 20 East. I mean, it's a congestion there. You know, if we had the same infrastructure on the west side, on the west side of Dallas, had the same on the east side of Dallas, there would be a big difference. The east side of Dallas is growing. Pleasant Grove is growing. You know, like golf course is going to grow. And those people in Pleasant Grove, they want more than one way to get to downtown Dallas to get to work. So the voters done voted only twice. We can debate, and we're going to keep debating. It's a great conversation. But in the meantime, that I think it's time to move on and develop the eastern portion of Dallas. And east portion of downtown Dallas and the east portion of the city. Especially on 45 down there, you know. I know Rick Callahan is part of my district, Von Seal Hill, Carolyn Davis, you know. If you want to debate, go into our community, debate in the community. I mean, if you want to talk about it, just go to that part of the community who said they're going to benefit, who's not going to benefit. If you look at the TxDOT said right now, when we build infrastructure, when we build roads, we build infrastructure for economic opportunity. And that's why I heard it also. When we build something, especially a freeway, it's economic opportunity when we build infrastructure and freeway. And that's what it's all about. It's all about economic opportunity. So with that, next speaker.
Your final speaker is John Ting. Not present. This concludes your open microphone speakers. We'll now move to the voting agenda. Item 1, approval of minutes of the February 18, 2015 City Council meeting.
Second. All in favor? Aye. Ayes carry. Next item.
Item 2, consideration of appointments to and removal from boards and commissions. This morning we have individual appointments and a full council removal. Charles Johnson is being nominated to the Board of Adjustments by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Atkins. Stephen Wynn is being nominated to the Community Development Commission by Councilmember Caraway. Joshua M. Vernon is being nominated to the Dallas Citizens Police Review Board by Councilmember Grayson. M. Eloy Trevino is being nominated to the Municipal Library Board by Councilmember Griggs. Donna Slater is being nominated to the Martin Luther King Jr. Community Center Board by Councilmember Callahan. Raquel A. Rollins is being nominated to the Park and Recreation Board by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Atkins, and Albert Bryant is being removed from the North Texas Education Finance Board, Corporation Board.
Do I have a motion?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Ayes carried. Next item, Madam Secretary.
Item 3, authorize the postponement of consideration of two ordinances amending Chapter 52, Administrative Procedures for the Construction Codes of the Dallas City Code. One ordinance would establish a requirement that employers provide rest breaks for construction workers and post accompanying signage, and the alternative ordinance would require signage and access to educational pamphlets on construction sites.
Ms. Grayson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm going to move to postpone consideration of the two ordinances amending Chapter 52 of the Dallas City Code and scheduled for City Council consideration on March 25th until the Rest Break Task Force has provided a recommendation on this topic to the Council.
Second.
Okay. I have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
And opposed?
Mr. Mayor, because this item requires...
I know.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. We had a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
And opposed? Ayes carried. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next item.
Mr. Mayor, your briefings follow.
Okay.
Mayor and Council, this morning we have Encore on hand. Charles Elk and Andrea Sanders are here to deliver this presentation. So as they make their way to the front. And I'll ask the speakers, make sure that the button in front of you is lit so that... Go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to be here this morning. My name is Charles Elk. We'd like to spend a few minutes with you this morning visiting about vegetation management. And we will, if you don't mind, we'll sort of tag team this discussion as we walk through the slides.
He's going to try to get you to speak closer to your mouth.
Okay.
There you go.
So what we'd like to try to accomplish this morning with our visit is maybe three things. One, just a brief rendition of the importance of vegetation management in our business. Second, what we are actually trying to accomplish in the community in a tangible way right now and through this spring. And thirdly, some of the communication efforts that we are undertaking. So that would be sort of our opportunity this morning. So obviously, tree pruning is probably the most contentious thing that we deal with on a day-to-day basis in our business. But it's certainly a combination of cost, reliability, and aesthetics, and then it makes a difference. It's not the only thing, obviously, that, as you well know, not the only thing that creates outages in our community, but it's certainly one of the things. And so. It's a big issue that we deal with. Just a brief moment here about, obviously not to get too basic, but about the electric system, the distribution system. Mr. Atkins, we'll refer a time or two during our presentation to a substation. A substation might be analogous in a manufacturing context to an intermodal facility where you bring in a product in bulk and then disperse it out in smaller quantities, maybe a warehouse, if you will, except obviously no storage associated with it, moves much more quickly. But so out of these substations are various what we describe as feeders, which are main distribution lines that come out of the substation into various places in the neighborhood. And it's so basic as to be simplistic, but the way our business operates is in one way is pretty simple. If these lights are on this morning, that means that there is a hard path all the way from these lights back to some generating plant, and it's operating at this moment. And so And so anywhere between here and there, if there's a break, if there's an interruption, then that creates an outage. And obviously, in the neighborhoods, there are a variety of reasons for outages, of which vegetation is one. The point of this slide is that it tends to be a situation where it affects more than one person when it occurs. It's not simply, usually anyway, not simply a situation where there's a vegetation-related outage that only impacts one customer. It impacts a few, or in some cases, many. I don't know if you can see the middle picture all that well or not. And this doesn't happen very often, but it's certainly a part of our experience on an ongoing basis. In that when vegetation comes in contact with an electric conductor such as that, it can arc, and perhaps you have seen the effects of that in the neighborhood from time to time. And obviously, that's something that we are trying to prevent. And so let's turn now to sort of what we are doing. And so we have pruned, and actually we turned this presentation in, I think, late last week. And while we had weather occur during the last week that prevented us from having sort of a full week's work in the vegetation management world, these numbers, this top number has changed a little bit. When we turned it in, we had pruned 442 miles in the city. As of Friday afternoon, that was 471. And so we are making considerable progress. It's our goal to prune 1,450 miles of distribution line in Dallas by the end of May. And then the other number that I would call to your attention is by the end of the year, we would attempt to add another 100 miles to that. So basically what we're doing is we are doing more vegetation work this year than we've done in the recent past. And we are, in 2015, we are front loading that work into the first 5 months of the year. And so we are approximately one third, which sort of matches up with the calendar. We are approximately one third toward that goal, and the idea, what we're trying to do here, very simply, is to get ourselves in a situation where, through the spring storms, which we can anticipate, that we will not have a widespread outage. Now, Mr. Mayor, if you don't mind, now I'd like for Ms. Sanders to address the council, okay, please.
Thank you. As Charles mentioned,
we put your mic a little closer.
Yes. As Charles mentioned, vegetation management is without question one of the most sensitive issues that our company deals with on a day-to-day basis. We understand that, and communication is key to our success in our vegetation management program. And so, what we've done is implemented a series of communication, including packets and emails. And in January, we sent out what we call vegetation management information packets to help customers understand what we were going to be doing in their community. Also, to provide to you all in your offices so that when constituents would call you, you would also understand what would be happening in those areas. We provided these mail outs to 478 homeowners associations and neighborhood associations. And we did that because they're key to getting information out and disseminating that in those communities. We also shared this with key city departments that have a lot of interaction with homeowners. The planning and neighborhood vitality group has been very helpful in reaching some of our homeowners, as well as many of your staff members that have assisted us in reaching out to customers. The packet was pretty comprehensive, and this is also in your appendix as well. We provided a map of each council district with the area, or kind of a dot that showed the area that was to be trimmed that particular month in January, and we got some excellent feedback from your staff and from some of the homeowners associations that said, the map is good, but we'd like to see some streets and more detail. And so we used that information and adjusted our VM updates to provide streets instead. We also provide a list of the certified contractors that will be working in the area. Oftentimes, we have five different contractors that work in our tree pruning department right now. And customers, when they see these trucks, may not really recognize that they are working on behalf of Encore. So in that packet, we also include information about those companies and their logos so that they can recognize us in those communities. There was brochures on what we're planning to do in the area. And those brochures looked like this, where it had all the information packets, including this green card, the green door hanger. And this is really important because in times past, customers would see this and just discount it as junk mail on their door, or they didn't pay attention to it because they didn't know what it was. And so it's really important that they understood that this information let them know that we were going to be in the area soon. But not only that, there's key contact information inside so that they can call us if they have questions regarding the tree trimming. There was also information about communicating with Encore. How can you reach us if you have questions or concern? And additionally, the Public Utility Commission fact sheet was also provided, as well as different frequently asked questions regarding tree trimming. So moving forward with this information that has been provided, what we've moved to is VM monthly email updates that we provide to the homeowners associations, neighborhood associations, Crime Watch, of course, our elected officials, and in working with those organizations to know that we're going to be in their area. But not just that, to let them know that we're available to come out to their meetings, community meetings, and answer questions regarding our VM program and assisting them in understanding what they can expect in answering those questions. This is a snapshot of the schedule for March that we provided to your office about a week ago. And we've also sent this out via email to all the homeowners associations and neighborhood associations that we've had on record. And we continue to update that email list because we do get calls from various organizations requesting to be added to that list. And what we have is divided by council district, and it will show just kind of a cross street of the area that the trimming will take place. And the idea is to give the customer or the resident an area that we will be trimming in. This goes out a month before the trimming takes place and allows them just to, it's kind of letting them know if you see the trucks, these are the areas, these are the streets and the surrounding streets that we will be trimming in those areas. And we've done that by each council district. So it's a high-level view of the areas that will be trimmed, but it also at least lets that homeowner be aware if they see those trucks that they understand what will be taking place. And if there is no trimming to be scheduled, then we will indicate that so that they will know that there wasn't trimming scheduled. The exception to that is this: if we had maybe an issue with the customer that we had to go back on, that there will be some exceptions. But for the most part, if there isn't trimming scheduled for that particular district, it will be indicated there. Sorry, Charles.
Mr. Mayor, this is just to add a couple of more points here. We will touch 59 substations, the area served by 59 substations in the city throughout this process. It will touch every part of the city geographically, and obviously it's intended to improve reliability. On the ground, sort of assisting with this effort, in addition to the communication efforts Ms. Sanders has outlined, we have And actually, I want to put these together, if you don't mind. It says we have 21 arborists, and that's true. And then we have 16 notifiers. But of the 16 notifiers, I believe something on the order of 13 of them are also certified arborists. What we're trying to do here is have the make positive contact with as many customers as we can. Before we, so about a month out, we have these guys go out on a proactive basis and knock doors in the areas that will be affected, and then leave the green tag that we were talking about there, and then we do it again before the trimming starts. So we on two occasions attempt to touch these customers in their neighborhoods, in addition to the homeowners association contact. So and the purpose of the arborist is to provide a more detailed education and understanding about how the trimming affects the health of the tree, what it'll look like, all of the as much information as we can provide to customers. And obviously we provide this door tag, and again we are looking at touching them 30 days ahead, and then come, we're not able to make contact with someone, come back again. And so again, these numbers that are in the latter bullets of this slide would also be somewhat larger commensurate with the work we did last week, although I don't have the specifics. So we have touched in mid 40s, maybe toward 50,000 customers in terms of knocking on their door, and we have made positive face-to-face contact by arborist with something over 13,000 to date. And so we're finding, Mr. Mayor, that we are touching, we're getting about a third, between two proactive contacts, we're getting to have face-to-face interaction with about a third of the customers during that process. And as Ms. Sanders said, here are the companies who are out there actually doing the work on behalf of Encore. And Mr. Mayor, this slide is there because Ms. Sanders said it should be. And with that, we'll close and be glad to.
Okay. Ms. Gaze.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I didn't write the slide name. Can you, it was one of the earlier slides about the, it's the tree limbs and the power lines, that diagram?
Four.
What's the pad mount transformer? I'm not familiar with that.
A pad mount transformer is?
It's still hardwired to that?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, but it looks like, is it running underground?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, so it's an underground, when you have an underground line.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
So basically, when you have an underground service, you take the transformer off the pole and put it in the yard.
Right.
On the ground.
Okay. They're buried in the ground, is it what they're buried? Or they're the ones that you see, like a kind of a structure that's
They're basically sitting on, it's called a pad mount transformer, okay, because they're basically sitting on a concrete pad.
Okay. I think I have seen those then.
Yes.
All right. I have to thank you, you know, for the communication you've given us so we can share it. As you know, we still get a lot of calls, and I appreciate, I've had several over the last couple weeks, and you've been very responsive and worked with my neighbors, so thank you for that. I got one just yesterday, and they got a thank you that somebody went out and met with her, so I appreciate that communication with the neighbors. When I was visiting a neighborhood recently, they identified an issue when they had lost electricity during, I think, the storm last year, and they were told, and this is, I wanted to see if this is true or not, when you start to prioritize what you're going to repair first, you, and it makes sense, you go to the ones that are easily accessible, the transformers or the lines. They are serviced by some lines that are the easements tough to get to, or they also said that some of the was behind some private property, the actual electric line. So it gave them a delay of 7 days before that could get repaired.
Tough.
That was in that bad storm last winter.
Tough to get to should be one of the criteria.
It should be one
it
of the
It should not
shouldn't.
Be.
Okay,
no.
So
No.
So you don't prioritize, how do you prioritize when you have all these down lines?
Dangerous ones first, I'm assuming.
Right.
In general, what we will do first is look at public critical infrastructure in terms of
hospitals,
various kinds of water treatment facilities, those kinds of things sort of go first. And beyond that, it begins to be a numbers game a little bit in terms of you look at what's out and you begin restoring the or prioritizing resources to outages, the restoration of which will get more customers on.
Okay.
And so the situation you described may have occurred exactly that way, but it shouldn't have been because it was hard to get to. If it occurred that way, if you have an outage that affects five people, it probably will not be prioritized on the level of a situation that affects 1,000.
Okay.
In neighborhoods, you tend to get some of those smaller outages that are further down the line.
When you identify easements that are difficult, can you work with either property owners or the city or who's ever causing the difficulty to be able to get to that in advance so that, you know, like this neighborhood won't be affected in the future? Or, I mean, how do you deal with when it's behind a fence, you know, in a like either a school campus or private property?
Well, we take each one of those on a case-by-case basis, but if it's a wood fence or something of that sort, it's probably not. It may very well not be something that prevents restoration. We may take action with that fence, as far as removing a section of it or something of that nature.
All right.
But we would, in terms of proactive, we'd love to do that, as far as meet with folks and understand how we might head off some of those
access
things.
The
yes, ma'am.
Power lines in there. Okay. All right. Thank you, and thank you for the presentation.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Ms. Davis?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First of all, I want to thank you guys for what you're doing. It is surely has helped in parts of my district. Andrew, I'm going to give you a poll number that I want you, and I'll give it to you after the presentation is over, and I have it down for you. I just wanted to say thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So good presentation. And I want to say that I appreciate Charles and Andrea's efforts at improving communication with people in my district. We have some of the oldest neighborhoods, and you know, almost none of Dallas had trees originally. And so a lot of the construction that took place between the 1900 and 1930 involved people moving into their first house and planting a tree, and those trees are now reaching the end of their urban life cycle. It means a lot of limbs down and a lot of power losses. I have never heard you two say, and I would reject the argument that East Dallas or any part of Dallas has to put up with power outages due to the number of trees. You've never set it up as an either or, and I appreciate that. I think that our citizens are entitled to expect reliable power delivery, but also trimming that is done in a sensitive way. And I think that your communication efforts are improving vastly on that score. I've gotten a lot of positive feedback. I would say to neighbors who are upset about having their trees trimmed that it be reasonable. You have to be reasonable. You may not like that your trees are getting trimmed, but if they are planted under power lines, they're going to wind up getting trimmed. I drove past two construction sites on the way down here this morning where builders have built new infill development and planted large canopy trees right under the power line. And it's just like, why would you even buy a house from a guy who would do that? It's dumb as a bag of hammers. The one thing I would say to you, and I know that this is not the responsibility of the External Affairs Department at Oncor, is that I do think Oncor has severely underinvested in infrastructure.
I know that that is the opinion of at least one economist who tracks the utility industry. The M Streets, the Greenland Hills, the original M Streets, has severe power outages that don't appear to be the result of vegetation at all. And I would very much like for Encore to address that. I don't know to what extent the Energy Futures Holdings bankruptcy is affecting your ability to invest, but like I say, Dallas citizens are entitled to two things from their electric utility: reliable power delivery and sensitive vegetation management. And I really appreciate your efforts on those scores. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, Ms. Sheffield-Cadane.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Let's go back to page four. Tell me on the, you see where the trees arc in there? Do you have many trees burned down because of this?
No,
I've never, I've never heard of that before.
No, sir. We don't have many trees burned down, but over prolonged time, if that conductor, which is energized, is in contact with that vegetation, you know, that vegetation is green, has liquid in it. That'll happen from time to time.
It will, but have you had it happen here?
Sure. We haven't burned the tree down. No, sir. I don't know of any trees that have burned down. But you will see occasionally the ends of leaves that are crisp or something like that as a result of that. And that's absolutely what we're trying to prevent.
Okay. Go to page four for me. Four. Okay. Tell me about the safety of an electrician getting up into all of that. I mean, are some of those lines hot, and does that make the limbs on them hot? Or explain a little bit of how they're safe doing what they're doing.
Are you speaking of the tree pruning companies that we have out there in the field?
Yes.
So yes, sir, these lines are hot. We are not generally, to Mr. Kingston's point, on trying to match the two. We are not generally asking customers to do without power while we're trimming their trees. And so all these lines are hot basically when the trees are being trimmed. But you raise them, and the way that's able to be accomplished is that there's a lot of training that goes into that. And so it does raise a great point though, because not too many years go by that we do not somewhere in the community have a problem, have an accident with a private tree trimmer who may not know that those lines are hot or may not be aware of the situation that they're dealing with. But those lines are absolutely hot, and it requires a lot of training.
Would there ever be an occasion where you left a hot tree overnight? Say one fell down and was hanging on the, I'm sure they wouldn't leave those up there.
No, sir. Well, on a case like that, we'd be out there as soon as possible. At the same time, the electric system is generally designed where if you have a fault of that sort occur, you will have safety devices that operate and open switches such that it isn't hot. But anytime you see one down like that, obviously it has to be presumed for safety purposes to be hot.
Okay, in District 9, you have no trimming going on in District 9. Is there a reason for that?
That's correct. And that's just for the month of March. And there is, as Charles stated, we have a lot of trimming that we're doing just in Dallas.
Okay.
And so we've kind of divided that up. And so it's based on the contractor's schedule. And it just so happens that District 9, they did not schedule any trimming in District 9 in March. There may be some in April.
Okay, so That's a monthly schedule.
Yes, sir. It is a monthly. Each month, we'll provide it the last week of the month prior.
Yes. Okay. Okay. And then when you put out the green slips on the doors, is that you talk here about making contact with everyone that you're going to be trimming. Is that your contact? Because you were saying you see them face to face.
Yes, sir.
And how many people do you, if you put the green deal on the door, is that contact?
What we do is every, our notifiers that Charles mentioned, they actually will attempt to speak to that resident to explain to them that we're coming. If the resident isn't there, they'll return and they'll leave a green card tag on the door, and then they'll return again a few days later trying to reach that customer to speak to them face to face. And if they are not able to reach them again, another green tag is left at that time.
Okay. And is all of that necessary to go trim trees off of a line? To come tell me that you're going to trim the trees in back of my house?
I think one of the benefits of it is just making sure that resident knows that we're coming, and it also they also get feedback. Those notifiers are also taking back comments and concern that homeowner may have. For example, if the homeowner says, you know, I want somebody to call me ahead of time, or I want somebody to come and talk to me about it, that notifier will also take that information back to the contractor that will be there. So there are some benefits to it.
So if you've got a block that's maybe a street that's 10 blocks long, are you gonna contact that entire street that you're going to be trimming in your area, or will you do two or three blocks at a time?
The way that they're notified is based on the circuit or the feeder that they're served from. So every house or every dwelling that is located on that particular feeder, which could be several blocks, they will be notified.
Oh, that's good. Okay, I got one more question. On your pole constructions all over the city, anywhere are you able to put those lines underground? And I guess all new construction is underground. Is that correct?
It's not completely. Basically, what we find, Mr. Kinane, is that most residential construction, the lines inside the subdivision are generally put underground. And that's basically paid for by the developer builder, and ultimately the cost of the lot or the home, if necessary, by the final purchaser of the home. And so we wind up now on much of the new construction with underground lines in the neighborhoods. Not so much the main lines from that substation to the entrance of the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And so the other part of that is if a customer is basically willing to pay the difference in cost to put a line underground where it's physically possible, and it is physically possible in many places, that we'll certainly accommodate that.
Okay, I think that's good. And most all of our pole construction is going to continue to be pole construction in our areas. I know throughout my area it's all pole. It would never go underground.
Probably not.
Too cold. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Rick Callahan, please.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to say thanks for reaching out in a strong way in our area. The last couple of times we've had, you know, major storms, you guys have been right there with us. And of course, Andrew, you know that one of my neighbors had a kind of a critical problem, and you guys got right in the middle of that situation. It was real hands-on. I really appreciate that. We've got a lot of trees, Mayor, and they're beautiful. We love them. We want them. We want to keep them. But at the same time, you know, people They can't keep planting trees underneath the power lines because it's going to be a mess. I know they don't want us to go trim them, but, you know, we have to keep them within a, you know, safe distance away, you know, from those lines. So I think it's a matter of education. I appreciate the courtesy. I know it takes a lot of time. You know, that's what you're in business to do. But I think the more openness and the more communication that we have, I think it's a lot better, you know, situation as a result of that. Because I do represent folks in older areas, most are aerial power lines. We don't have that many of the ground transformers. You know, those are usually most of the, you know, the newer neighborhoods. But, again, I appreciate you guys, what you're doing, and it makes our job a lot simpler and when we have, you know, the power down. My neighborhood, as you know, has been really a problem for years, and that was one thing I swore I would do when I got on the council, is try to improve that, and I'm happy to know that you know, help is on the way, that we're going to get some you know, extra power improvements to that immediate neighborhood, because it seems like every time a drop of water falls from the sky, you know, we have a power outage, and I'm tired of going around changing all my clocks. And every time that you have that, just that glitch, it'll change. And sometimes it's 2 or 3 minutes, and it'll ramp back up, but sometimes it's 2 or 3 hours. I got so bad, I have a detached garage that I had to go put a door to get into my garage because, you know, the garage door opened, you couldn't get the garage door up because the power was always down in a storm. So it's a big problem. It's a big issue. And thanks for the things that you're doing to try to alleviate that. Appreciate it.
Jerry?
All right. Hey, y'all have come a long way over the last several years. You know, we used to get a lot of complaints about the trimming and such. And then we had that big old ice storm about 2-3 years ago. And people were out of power for several days. Well, then that was a game changer, because then people, I think, citizens really started understanding how important tree trimming is. And that really changed whole attitudes. Go to slide 4. Maybe it's that's it. You know, the 1,550 miles, that's impressive. I mean, people, when you get your head around that, I mean, that's going all the way to New York City and trimming all the way to New York City. That's big time. And then, to quite frankly, to receive as few complaints that we received today, you know, my hat's off to you. My hat's off to you. And then that probably goes back to slide 5. And which is how you've reached out. You know, y'all have just progressed over the years, and I've watched you. I have no question that if somebody was to call me right now, that by the end of the day, particularly on a day like today, but by the end of the day, it will be taken care of. Y'all are so responsive. So great job in regards to that. Slide 11. Slide 11, try maybe 10. Yeah, that's it right there. You know, that, and so when it hits the fan, man, y'all bring them in from all over. They come from all over to come help us out and get us out from under. And that's really the last message I want to leave, is when you guys go back, just let them know, at least this old boy, tell them that how much we appreciate it. Because when it hits the fan and we can't control weather like that, and it's, you know, those things are cracked and hitting our lines, but boy, they're leaving their families, they're working all night long in pretty rough conditions, getting that power back up for us, and just a big time thank you for what y'all have done. So as you can tell, y'all have turned me into a big fan. So thank y'all very much.
We're certainly hopeful we don't have to bring them in from all over tomorrow.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Okay, Ms. Grayson.
Thank you. I just want to say thank you, as everyone has, but especially to both of you. You are just terrific to work with, and I mean, I kind of know that's your job, but you're both very good at it, so I appreciate it. And I also really appreciate the company's sensitivity to the people who care so much about their trees. You know that people care about them. You know, it's difficult because they don't want their electricity to go off, but they also want to keep their beautiful trees. And if we could go to slide 14. No, 14. That, you know, that's the fear that everybody has, is that their trees are going to look like that. And it's a real balance that your company has to strike between the reliability and yet not infuriating folks and making them so upset that their trees are going to end up looking like that. One thing that we're going to do in the city is, part of this, I think, has been our fault because our regs require so many trees to be planted in many instances when there's development. And we're going to go back and we're going to look at our tree ordinance and our landscaping ordinance, and we're going to look at the regs and see if we can make sure that we change them up so that people are not planting under power lines. And I think that's going to be helpful in the future, because what you're dealing with today is what was done in the past, and we're going to make sure that in the future people aren't planting under power lines. I did want to ask you both if you would again emphasize, as you did in your materials that you've been passing out, that people not try to trim trees themselves when they've got power lines running through the branches, because that is so dangerous. I know the arborist who trims my trees has said many, many times that people just need to understand they need to hire a professional to do that, because it is very dangerous to try and trim them yourselves. Could you tell me, do you trim by species, or do you just have a standard trimming space of 10 feet or whatever it is? Because, you know, some species grow back a lot faster than others do. Do you trim by species?
You know, we don't.
You don't.
That's something we sort of continually study. And there are other ways to trim. We obviously, this is something that we benchmark and talk about a lot with other power companies across the country. And the reason we don't, frankly, trim a species specific is that we obviously deal with thousands and thousands, millions of trees. So trimming on a species specific is sort of good on the average, but as many trees as we deal with, we will find some slower growing trees, you know, there's a fair amount of irrigation, there's a fair amount of other circumstances that cause in some cases, even the slower growing species to grow pretty fast. And so for that reason, we really haven't gone to a species specific trim, but it is something that we pay a lot of attention to in visiting with other power companies.
Because I know in Oklahoma they do that. They
right.
trim by species. And what happens with that, though, is that when you do that, you don't get those kinds of drastic cuts that you're doing in that illustration. And so I'd like you to keep talking more about it. I mean, if you would, just because I think it is helpful on things like live oaks that grow back very, very slowly.
Yes, ma'am.
Not the one in my backyard, which grows like a weed, but a lot of live oaks in general are very slow growing. And so when you trim them that drastically, it's going to take many, many years before they ever grow back adequately. So, you know, I would just for one appreciate it if you would all keep noodling that around in your company and seeing if maybe you would do that. And I'd like to pivot for a minute to the trails and say thank you all so much for letting us do the trails under your power lines, because those have been so popular in the city, and you know that. I mean, people love these trails. They want more trails. I feel like our Preston Ridge Trail has increased property values, and it's so well used. And Charles, I know you go up and down the trail. I did want to ask you, because now you have a pretty standard approach toward vegetation on all the trails, and ours being one of the first, we were lucky and we got a lot of crepe myrtle trees, which help provide shade. And now those aren't allowed anymore. But we're wondering maybe if you, and also it's still a lot of bureaucracy in your company to get approvals. We're constantly waiting. So could I talk to you about that and maybe speed that up a little bit? But also, if we were to trim the crepe myrtles if they get too tall, would you consider letting us put some more crepe myrtles on the various trails? If we as a city agreed to trim them?
This is a continuing conversation that Mr. Gonzalez and I have as well. Don't know the answer to that. And the reason simply is this. The discussion we've had today about tree pruning has been on local distribution lines. And if there's an outage there, as has been pointed out, it's really significant. But it's a whole other matter with regard to our transmission lines. And so on some of the very largest transmission lines, we frankly, you know, don't allow any trees at all under those transmission lines. The 345,000 volt transmission lines that run mostly, some in the city, but mostly across the country, we try not to have any trees at all under those transmission lines. Then we come to the 138,000 volt transmission lines, which comprise the bulk of the line, the rights of way that are used for the trails. And so where we are at today is we're trying to keep the vegetation under those lines to 5 feet or so.
Right, that's your current
yes,
policy
ma'am.
That you've
and
started.
So, and so to, you know, we kind of struggle, to be honest with you, about, so we have such contentious issues from time to time about pruning trees. The idea of planting additional ones under power lines is something that we struggle with. But I will tell you this, we'll continue to talk about it. I mean, we're kind of into the trail business. We think this is our unique contribution to
and
make
you
to the
do,
city.
Do you know you get so many kudos from people for working with us and letting us have those easements so we can do these trails and putting the vegetation on them? That is a wonderful PR tool for you all. And
you know, I think maybe Mr. Winters here earlier, I think maybe as much as a third of the current plan of the master trails are sort of slated in some way under on those rights of way.
Right.
And so that's something that we can do. And so we would ask, we'd love to continue that conversation, and we would also ask, frankly, for your leniency with us a little bit on that whole concept.
Well, you know, I just to press the point and then I'll let it go. There are types of crepes that don't get all that tall. But if, you know, there was something that grew like a weed and got tall and we agreed to trim it before it became problematic, I mean, that might be a compromise. And let's keep talking about it, okay? Because we need shade. And I know there was some discussion with Willis Winters about putting shade structures on the trails. And I think you all had that conversation.
Yes, ma'am.
But you know those shade structures would be at least 10 feet tall, wouldn't they? They wouldn't be 5 feet tall.
No, I think our view about shade structures is we know they won't grow. In other words, so if we put that crepe myrtle there, it may or may not grow up fairly tall. If we can put a shade structure in a certain place, it's there, and we know that it won't grow. And so we could be somewhat more comfortable with that. Is sort of the general logic that drives that.
Well, let's keep talking about it, because I kind of like our idea about perhaps trimming the trees if they by some chance got a little tall.
Hmm.
Okay?
Yes, ma'am.
We'll keep talking about it. Thank you. And thanks for coming today. And the packets were really very good. They were full of good information. So
okay.
Thanks for providing.
Adam Medrano.
I'm going to be quick. I just want to thank Andrea for always going above and beyond when working with my constituents, my office. We've been out there together at midnight on the street trying to help and make sure that these folks get their power back on. So I do appreciate you. Excuse me, and all the work that y'all do. Thank you.
Okay, and go. AC?
Just a comment, follow-up comment, because I can't help but comment. Every time that Charles visits with me to talk to me about anything other than crepe myrtles, I bring up the subject of crepe myrtles. And so just so you all know that has been a wonderful agreement that we have with us, and they're also getting a benefit by way of not only the goodwill but the maintenance that we have taken on as part of that. I have offered up whatever we would need to do to keep them at certain heights, just so that we could have more shade and that people would really have an even better opportunity to go and exercise out there, knowing that there's shade breaks that they could be doing while they're there. I understand there's operational issues that you have to address and fully understand that, but I'm going to continue the conversation.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
I won't be brief. Charles, Andrew, I just got to thank you from the bottom of my heart. I mean, these people work tirelessly. I mean, me and Andrew rode at 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning, you know, riding in the neighborhood to make sure lights was back on, and she gave a number out. And Charles, thank you for coming out. I think we got a meeting scheduled tomorrow night in my community. But one good thing about Encore right now, we done learned so much from Encore. The point is learning the language of Encore, learn what they do and what they do not do. You know, sometimes we call them and maybe they need some help. You know, sometimes we got to have a two-way communication. And that's what we found out in my community is, number one, we did not communicate more with Encore. We just picked the phone and called. We're not asking to come out. Tell me, why is the lights out? Tell me, why is the transformer is blowing out? Tell me what's going on. They didn't know. And I advise all y'all council members to bring them out, let them discuss in the community what's going on. Let them tell you what the grid is. Tell them the metric. Why are these lights on? Why are these lights off? Because you have some neighbors say, my lights is on, but my neighbor lights is off. So what's going on? So why does not that happen? And sometimes that if we don't communicate with them and when the truck's there, they do need eyes and ears from us to let us know, because it might be a limb down in the alley, which they do not know, and pick up a phone and tell them there is a situation over here, which they might not know until maybe 3 or 4 days later, and your lights are still out. So we have had experience in that, because sometimes that, especially in Singing Hill, there was one lady, light was out for a long period of time, but one tree fell over, and we didn't know that one tree just had 4 houses on it. Everybody else's lights were around there until Andre came out and said, oh, here's the problem here. Now let's see what the problem is. And now we do understand the communication, how we communicate with Encore, how we talk to them. And if we do a great job there, we had a great partner with Encore. I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart and from everybody in District 8. Y'all been doing a great, outstanding job. You know, thank you. With that, AC, I think we have another.
Mr. Atkins,
yes.
May I close with two quick things?
Yes.
One, and Mr. Kingston, we would be glad to get the specifics of that neighborhood that you mentioned earlier about the details of that, because the lights are not going off by themselves. There's a reason for that, and we'll work on it. The other had to do with the idea of the Energy Future Holdings, the procedures of Energy Future Holdings have nothing to do with Encore. We are, in the sense that we're ring fenced, we're spending, investing about $1 billion a year in capital without regard to what's going on with our majority owner. The other thing I would just say is thank you all very much. You've welcomed us in your offices and in your districts. And we very much want to thank those who work with you in your offices, your staff members, who've been most courteous and helpful as we go about our activities. Mr. Atkins, thank you, sir.
You have to, you're going to do it right. Yeah, okay. Make a motion. Yeah, we're going to do it. You don't make a motion, you move it up, right?
Madam Secretary, next item. Briefing number B, who doing this? The conservation.
AC.
Mayor and Council, the staff is prepared with a conservation district presentation. David Cossum will be doing that.
Would you go through the whole presentation?
Yeah.
We would at first. I thought we were going to. Everybody clear on what we're going to do?
Yeah.
Okay.
Good morning, Mayor.
Go ahead and start.
Thank you.
This is a briefing on the City Plan Commission proposed amendments to the Conservation District regulations. And, you know, I guess I'd be a little bit remiss if I didn't start out by acknowledging the number of participants in this process over many zoning ordinance committee meetings, participation from Dallas Homeowners League, from the Home Builders Association and others. There was a lot of time and effort devoted to this process from a lot of different quarters, and certainly wouldn't be here without all that participation from those individuals as well as staff. The on slide three, we just wanted to cover real quickly all the various zoning tools that are available when it comes to neighborhood conservation or preservation efforts. First of which we're familiar with is the Plan Development District. Probably a good example of that in a residential area is Forest Hills, Big Forest Hills over in East Dallas, where they chose to establish really what they were interested in preserving was the setbacks along the various streets. They had a myriad of different types of setbacks depending on what street it was on, and that was kind of incorporated within that plan development district. So if that's really all a neighborhood's interested in preserving is something not architecture related, then the plan development district is a very good tool for that. The next option available is neighborhood stabilization overlay. This was something that was introduced to the city back in around 2005 as perhaps something that was less restrictive in terms of the actual architectural guidelines, but did protect kind of the form of the structures adjacent to the street to lend consistency to a neighborhood, things like garage placement, setbacks that, again, would conserve kind of the appearance along the street. Conservation districts, obviously, is the next tool that's available. Once we enter into the conservation districts, we're really regulating architectural styles of homes. We're attempting to conserve the character of an area, the architectural character of an area, and establish those procedures. We first adopted our conservation district ordinance back in 1986. And we'll go over the list of conservation districts we have here momentarily. The last tool, obviously, that we have several of within the city is also the historic district. Historic districts also regulate architectural styles, but they also have an increased level of review in terms of work reviews, everything from changing out windows to other modifications of the structure of the house. So that's probably the most intensive type of regulation is the historic district, but the conservation district is certainly just below that in terms of regulating architectural styles. You can see on the next slide, we do have 17 existing conservation districts, first of which Kings Highway was adopted back in 1988. It's been amended on a couple occasions. And then up to more recently, Stevens Park Conservation District was a few years back, a couple of years. Just in terms of background on how long we've been talking about this process, back in December of 2009, Council had requested that Center Manager brief the Economic Development Committee on the processes to establish a conservation district. That was done in April of 2010, where we just kind of reviewed the existing processes to establish it. Then back in March of 2013, we came back to the Quality of Life Committee with some general concepts on how the conservation district might be amended. Shortly after that, we entered into the Zoning Ordinance Committee review process. And that brings us to the point we're at today. At the time, the primary questions raised by council had to do with nonconformity. What was an appropriate threshold to initiate the process? How do we look at reply forms once we get to City Council and the City Plan Commission? Should there be a minimum threshold of reply forms required? How could we improve the transparency of the process? Do we need to look at the size of the conservation districts? Obviously, the larger they are, the more input there is, and you just end up with a longer process typically. Then the distinction between the authorization of consideration of the district and the actual zoning process. And lastly, kind of the appropriate role that staff played in the process. As I just mentioned, Zoning Ordinance Committee first started talking this back in March of 2014, or actually that was their final recommendation. They began in November of the previous year. At that point, they did forward a recommendation to the City Plan Commission. The Plan Commission did remand back several items for additional consideration from Zoning Ordinance Committee. This was kind of the outstanding list of issues, if you will, that there seemed to be still a lot of debate about, at least among the homeowners groups and the home builders groups. That was done, then came back with a final recommendation to the Plan Commission on July 24th. And ultimately, this recommendation is what we're before you today with. So in total, there were 11 different Zoning Ordinance Committee meetings. In addition, there was at least one meeting hosted here at City Hall by the Homeowners League and several other meetings that staff did not participate in. The objectives of the proposed amendments are primarily to enhance the transparency of the process. One of the things that always occurred at the public hearings in front of the council and in front of the plan commissions was some individuals might represent, they didn't know what they were signing up for. They wanted to look at a conservation district or study it. They didn't know that they would eventually end up with the zoning change process. So we're just, that was a primary kind of just overall transparency. This is the process in the education that went behind that. Also an attempt to clearly state what a conservation district was and then look at the other tools that were available to encourage those neighborhoods to consider all those options if they wanted some type of regulations, but not perhaps to the extent a conservation district might include. Then to define the specific steps in the process, we had very informal requirements that we followed. So there was processes in terms of neighborhood meetings, in terms of notification that would occur, but there was a desire to see that more formalized, which has been done. And then as part of the transparency we just talked about, again, just clarify that the positions potentially initiate a zoning change on the property itself. And then also it was decided to include some regulations how you might amend that conservation district in the future. Right now within the city, any property owner is entitled to come in and ask for zoning change on their property, and that would include somebody that resides in a conservation district. So basically what's happened is we just included some additional notification to be included in that to make sure the conservation district folks are aware of what's coming in. So the key recommended amendments to the process, we kind of took a page out of our neighborhood stabilization overlay by having a minimum of 10 people committee, a 10-person committee, if you will, that would kind of initiate the process with the city, kind of talk about the bare minimum requirements. Do they qualify for a conservation district? Are there architectural areas of the community that need to, that they desire to conserve? So once that first step happens, then we would enter the petition process. So we've made that distinguish the termination of eligibility from the actual preparation of the CD ordinance. Again, that just seemed to be something that we would hear a lot about during the public hearing process. In addition to that, now we have formalized that we'll have a minimum of 2 pre-application meetings prior to that petition being circulated in the neighborhood. Notices will go out to all property owners that could be impacted. After those 2 meetings occur, then staff has a certain amount of time to deliver the petitions that would then be circulated to initiate the second phase, the actual zoning process on the neighborhood. Then lastly, that we would, once the public hearing is finalized, and excuse me, once we have our ordinance finalized, we'd go back to the community and talk about what those provisions are. The next page is, again, just kind of more clearly define what a conservation district is designed to accomplish, that it's a means to really protect the physical attributes of the neighborhood. On page 11, we have a comparison of the two processes. What you see is the existing process on the left-hand side, kind of a summary of the proposed process on the right-hand side, which we'll go in more detail on the next page. But today we have a petition that begins the process, and that petition is to initiate a feasibility study to look at whether the neighborhood should consider establishing a conservation district. Then the next step is that it would go to a public information meeting. Again, that's not particularly codified, but that is the policy. Then enough public meetings to draft the conceptual plan, which is really just kind of identifying the architectural styles that are prevalent in the community, and then draft the CDE ordinance. Again, then we enter the public hearing process. If we go on to page 12, these are basically what has been proposed now in terms of amendment to the process. The neighborhood committee would be the ones to submit the determination of eligibility. Then staff has a certain amount of time whether to say, yes, it is eligible, or no, it is not. If staff says no, then there is an appeal process to the City Plan Commission. Once it's determined to be eligible, then we would go out into the community, meet with the neighborhood at a minimum of 2 pre-application meetings to kind of talk about the conservation district tool, to talk about other tools that could be considered, and all the types of regulations that may or may not be considered as part of a conservation district process. After those 2 meetings are occurred, where that communication and education has occurred within the community, then the petitions would be delivered to the neighborhood committee, the neighborhood leadership, to go out and obtain signatures to initiate the second phase of the process, the zoning phase of the process. I think one issue was we really don't have a time limit on that currently, so this incorporated a time frame where those petitions had to be returned to the city. So I think one of the frustrations was kind of the sense of limbo if this process went on too long, that either somebody selling a home or looking at purchasing a home might be in. So this kind of sets out a time limit. The more homes, though, the longer time period you have to obtain those signatures. Then once those are submitted, 51%, again, this is kind of very similar to our NSO process, you could pay a fee to bring that conservation district forward. To waive the fee, it would require 75% signatures on that petition. Our policy in the past historically has been that if a neighborhood didn't want to pay the application fee for a conservation district, typically the threshold for the Plan Commission to consider authorizing a hearing would be around that 75% number before they would consider authorizing it. So they'd instruct the neighborhood, well, get us 75% support and we'll authorize the hearing. So that was an informal process, and most of our districts have been established through the authorized hearing process versus the fee process. And now that's been codified just to say, if you get 75% to initiate, then that initiates the process without paying the fee. And again, it's very similar to the NSO procedures. So once staff has verified that the petitions, once they're submitted and staff has a time period that they have to do that, then we'd go to the final public meetings, one at least 30 days prior to the City Plan Commission consideration. And then, as I previously mentioned, we also established how we would go about either proposing to expand an existing CA, how do we amend or create a sub-district within a CD, and then how would somebody be able to remove property from a conservation district. So those procedures are now outlined within the ordinance where they were not previously. One of the topics, again, that received quite a bit of debate was circled around either the number of signatures required to initiate the process, and how does council consider these reply forms once the public hearings are announced. Basically, because of the time frame we're looking at, it would be very difficult to go out for a neighborhood to go out and try to encourage folks to return those reply forms in that window. All of our other zoning cases, including historic districts, it's just a reply form process. We report those counts to City Council. City Council makes a determination, partly looking at the reply forms. Obviously, the public hearings, and that input kind of directs Council on how they may or may not choose to support a request. And really, since that's the process in place for every other type of zoning district consideration, the recommendation was just to keep that. But to address the concerns of the transparency, what folks were signing up for, that is now clearly stated at the very front end that you are signing up for a potential zoning change on your property when you make that application, when the committee comes in with those 51% signatures or those 75% to waive the fee. So that's how that particular issue was addressed. Next steps would be to place this on an agenda, schedule it for City Council consideration after we receive your input on how to proceed from here. So with that, I'll be happy to respond to any questions.
Anyone got a question?
Yeah.
Sheffield.
Okay, David. You said to enhance the transparency of the process, you only need 50.1% of a neighborhood. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Right now, today that's the requirement in the ordinance, and that is the proposed requirement. If the neighborhood pays a fee, that you'd have to have 50% plus one.
Okay. Now, to start the process, all I need is 10 signatures.
To start the process, we need a neighborhood committee of 10 people just to begin looking at the area to see if it's even eligible for a conservation district.
To change my zoning.
No, sir, that does not begin the zoning change. And I think that was what we were trying to distinguish was that when we get to the petition point, I'm signing up for acknowledging that this results in a zoning change. But at the very front end, you're correct that the committee is just looking at is it eligible or not, and doing some research and providing some information to staff to make that determination.
Does the 10% designate the changes?
No, sir. The community has to decide
petition,
on those.
They don't say what they want to change it to?
They will not present the architectural styles that are going to be looked at till we reach the pre-application process.
And then when they get the 50.1%, does that designate how they want the changes to be?
Yes, sir. On that application, we will have listed all the things a conservation district could regulate. And then we'll also mark off, or it'll be explained, what types of changes are being proposed as part of this process, whether we're going to regulate architectural style setbacks, sidewalks, garage placement.
So at that point, then, that all of that 50.1% will know what the changes are going to be.
The people that sign that, yes, sir.
Okay. Here's one of my big problems.
Mm-hmm.
To make changes like that in an area, it should be a lot more folks, and I think it should be upwards to at least 65%, not 50.1.
Yes, sir.
Now, I've been through this, and a lot of our council has already been through this with us, and these are the battles, and I had most of them in District 9, and these are the battles. Let me tell you, when we got over 60, up to 65%, it wasn't a challenge. When you get under 60%, it was a big challenge. And let me tell you, you had neighbors fighting each other. You had neighbors that had lived together their entire lives, wouldn't even speak to each other anymore. So for this to work and for you to change your entire system in your neighborhood, you need to have the right number.
Yes.
And I've found out that 65% is a very good number, and it works. And I've had several happen. I had one happen at 95%. It went through consent agenda. I mean, these do work, but you got to have the consent of the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And 50.1% is not enough.
Yes, sir.
And that's what I'm advocating is to, for somehow, to get more than 50.1%.
Yes, sir.
So, and I don't know that can happen here.
Well, no, sir.
Moving this forward.
When we get to the public hearing, council is free to make a motion to up that. Once that's scheduled on your agenda, there could be a variety of motions offered by the city council.
Yeah. On basically what we're doing today, just going to make the regulations move it forward. We can make any change at the end of the day.
At that time.
And Shepherd, I agree with Shepherd. We understand that.
Yeah.
You know, when we first came here, and I know your neighbors had a big fight.
Bad.
It was like a dried down fight, and it's something that, you know, we need to talk about, but we do need to move this forward.
And it was debated quite a bit. And
It did.
It was debated, yeah. Okay.
Yes,
but I think we found out in that process what works, and we could work it at 65.
Okay.
Thank you,
Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I believe we should move this forward. I think there's a lot of work. How many, you said over 11 meetings regarding the committee put together?
Yes, ma'am. Right.
And did all the existing conservation districts participate?
Most of them did, okay. At least at some of the meetings. I can't tell you everybody showed up for every one, but you'll see on an addendum on page that lists out some of the existing conservation districts.
And
home builders and some of those that were concerned with the process, realtors.
So they came up with what was recommended to the ZOAC committee, is that correct?
Well, the ZOAC actually had a different recommendation on that threshold, but okay. The Plan Commission came out with the 50 plus one.
So who took the the committee that was working, that mm-hmm. everybody was participating in, they took that recommendation, went to CPC,
yes,
and got changed
zoning,
got lowered?
The Zoning Ordinance Committee came forward with a recommendation on a threshold, I believe it was 65 or 66, 65%. In fact, that was one thing that CPC sent back for ZOAC when they had their three additional meetings to look at that more closely.
Okay, so.
Ultimately, they came back with the same, but the motion at City Plan Commission, after hearing all the public testimony, was to make 50% plus one.
But some of these other changes you've made, or they've recommended.
Oh, I think there was a lot of support for a lot of the changes from both sides. I think everybody recognized the more we can educate the neighborhood and kind of more in a more deliberative process was a benefit.
And I haven't read all the proposed changes because mm-hmm. they're not in this
yeah, the ordinance is online. I'll make sure to send that out to everybody.
So it looks like from your briefing, though, that most of the recommendations change the way a new CD is started versus mm-hmm. impacting the way existing ones exist today. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct.
Does it
correct.
Clarify a little bit about, because I had the one in my mm-hmm. district has reached out about making some
yes,
changes.
Ma'am.
Does it addresses
the changes?
It does
talk about the amendment okay. process. Yes, ma'am.
All right. I will be... want to look at that because that could affect.
Sure.
So then we take the responsibility enforcing that the restrictions or the guidelines mm-hmm. that are determined, is that correct? Then our building inspection does.
Yes, ma'am.
Versus. So how do we work with the neighbors? Do the neighbors then report if they see activity that's non-compliant? Or, I mean, does it cost our city then to take on the responsibility of enforcement of conservation districts?
You know, there's some additional review involved over and above what a typical home might require. We've talked about amending our fee structure in the past with historic district and conservation districts. At that time, council decided probably the benefit outweighed that cost from there. Again, that was at that time where council looked at, you know, right now within a planned development district, for instance, there's a 10% surcharge basically for buildings within a PD, but there's no surcharge on the permitting process for a conservation district review or a historic district review.
Well, we're supposed to be cost recovery on those type of fees. So if it's costing us more, I think we need to look at it.
Correct.
I mean, if it's taking more staff time and if it's taking more time building inspections because of this, maybe it's not our other areas of, you know, it's being neglected. So I think it's worth looking at. And I mean, I think this is an important ordinance because it affects people's property rights. So mm-hmm. we need to take it up and make sure that we're not violating our residents' property rights. Thanks.
Ms. Agree.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you for this presentation. I have a question about the voting process. So initially, it's to start the petition process, it's 10 signatures.
Well, again, we get the information on the neighborhood committee. There are signatures. Mm-hmm. What we found is through the NSO process and conservation district process, we just need to know the folks leading the charge are pretty well distributed throughout the geographic area. And I think there's always been a core group typically associated with kind of leading a charge, as it takes in any neighborhood to do anything. So yes, it's 10 a minimum of 10 that would be kind of the core group that staff would fall back on to help communicate to the neighborhood.
And then we were talking a little bit the existing voting process. Mm-hmm. And so that right now it's just anything over 50%, 50% plus one.
Initiates, yes, sir.
Okay, then initiates it.
Initiates the zoning process of it. Today, it's 50% plus one to initiate the comprehensive or the conceptual plan.
To initiate the conceptual plan. And then as things move along, then do you seek feedback again currently?
We seek feedback through the neighborhood meetings, yes, sir.
Through the neighborhood meetings? And so the proposal right now would be, is just to clarify what Mr. Cadane was saying, was 65-66% to start the process?
No, sir. The proposal, as recommended by the Plan Commission, is 50% plus one to start the zoning process, the zoning part of it. Or alternatively, if you want to have your fee waived, it would be 75%. That would then you not have to pay the zoning change fee, which is today pretty minimal. I mean, I think it's $2,400. Minimal to some. That was probably not the right term to use.
Then one concern in this whole voting that's come up is I know this is one of those processes that sends out cards. Or eventually we send
sure,
out, we let
zoning.
Everyone know.
Mm-hmm.
Is really how the cards are counted in the mm-hmm. process. Because oftentimes you have a whole group of people, in my experience, that don't vote. And by not voting, some of them may actually be supporters, some may be opposed, and some may not care. And so in this process for setting up these conservation districts, one concern about I've had about the voting process is that whole block, it almost seems like they're counted against people, or they're counted with the group that votes against, because then when you get a percentage back, it's just the percentage of individuals who support it, and it's not really as expressed as a ratio of support versus total votes.
It's expressed both ways, I think. And again, we make no count. We report the count, but we don't, just like any other zoning change. So it's typically with conservation districts, we'll go the next step, which is to provide information on both the number of people notified and the number of people that responded, and provide it both ways, just for consideration. But there's no trigger by that other than what you typically see with a zoning change.
I think that number is important to emphasize moving forward, the total number of votes that are cast, because there are a group of people that end up in these situations that some ways they care, they don't care, but they didn't vote, and so we don't want to mislead the making the decision, because these times, as Sheffy has said, can oftentimes get very
We have no way of assessing one way or the other if they don't vote, so we don't try to.
Well, good. Thank you for that. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay, and it's just a recommendation that doesn't call for a vote, and just AC, right? Just to move it forward.
Right. This is just the briefing.
Brief move forward.
Yes.
Okay. Next item.
Wait. I did push my button.
Oh, sorry, Ms. Grayson.
I just did it.
You accidentally do it?
No, I just did it.
You just did it. Okay.
What's the criteria for eligibility?
Do you have that very handy? Basically, a consistent or some consistent architectural attributes, physical attributes of the area.
So it's not age necessarily.
Is it 25 years to that? So let me just read them. Must contain at least one block face, so we can't just come in and do a couple of houses. Must be either stable or stabilizing as defined in this section, meaning you don't have a lot of undeveloped lots, basically. That the area is compact and contiguous with boundary lines drawn to the logical edges of the area or subdivision, so you don't want gerrymandering based on your support or not. And then at least 75% of lots are developed with buildings at least 25 years old. So 75% of the lots 25 years old, and that there are physical attributes that include recognizable architectural styles.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Okay, AC, I guess the next two items, if we get those passed, we can take the afternoon speakers, we can break for the rest of the day.
Well, very
AC?
Good. I will move even quicker with the update on CUSP as far as our changes within the organization to address customer service and the like. We've been having an ongoing conversation with regards to our IT services, and to the extent we are looking at that, we're looking at it from both outside and inside customers, and particularly in the outside consultants. We were here recently given a opportunity to compete for and were successful in getting a grant from IBM, who brought some talent from literally all over the globe to take a look at our systems. And as we have been going through our strategic analysis of our IT program, which has been focused on infrastructure and personnel connectivity and data and security, we took advantage of having those experts come in and take a look at the connectivity and data components in particular. They brought to us individuals that are named there in the slide that were literally from all over the world. They had some in from London, from Asia, and are well known in the IBM circles as being very high quality consultants. They spent a short amount of time, relatively speaking, 18 days, but it was, since they were from way out of town, they were stationed here. They had nothing to do other than work on our project. Now, they might have gotten away and seen some of the sites, but for the very most part, they had them sequestered to work on this assignment. They visited with 80 various customers representing both internal, external constituents of one kind or the other, and they conducted a good bit of research to see to what extent they could be helpful in helping point out some improvements in our systems. The value that was placed on their expertise and time is estimated to be around $500,000. Now, some of the questions that they were asked to look at, originally it's kind of started out with a public safety, if you will, police focus, but as we discussed it more with them, we wanted to broaden out beyond just police into some of the other areas, which they were glad to do. And we're also very impressed that we were moving in the area of broadening our view about how to address community issues and not be looking at just a police approach for public safety or streets and only dealing with streets, but how we can be working together to improve neighborhoods from a holistic wraparound approach. When they went and had their various analytics done and their interviews, their findings are not very surprising. Is probably something more along the lines of helping somebody from the outside just tell you in more specific terms just what you are challenged with and then to give that outside perspective about what some of the needs are for change. But as shown there on slide six, they still see us. While they see some progress being made, we're still very siloed. We got a very protective culture in many areas. There's some trust issues that are being created in the community when people feel that we are not open with them about our data. Do I need to have a quorum when I'm just giving information?
I don't know. Go ahead.
Okay. So those were some of the issues that were brought back to us. And once again, I really did not see them as surprising. But what was the help that we were getting from them is trying to get some additional insights on specific things that we could be doing over the next year they gave us a schedule of even 4 years and beyond on specific things that we should be focused on to make improvements, some that were low-hanging fruit to a certain extent, and some that will be taking much more investment. Now, to that end, those are what you see there is just a highlights. There's more information that we'll be getting from them. And it's also indicated on the slides, there were many of the things, or several of the items that they had, that indeed we're already working on. So we were glad to see that there was overlap there. As we move forward, we're going to be getting a full report from them in about 2 months, and will be combined with our other efforts in strategic planning that will be presented to the council in spring. So
with that, it is 12. Jerry, we try.
This will be very, very
go
quick.
Ahead,
the Monica Alonzo turns 29. We've been in she went to Austin today, but we've been in constant touch with her, and she's going to get the biggest kick of when we stream to her of singing happy birthday to her.
Because okay, Sheffy, let's go. Okay. Right.
Sheffy,
ready?
Ready.
We got a cake.
Yeah, where's the cake?
The cake's here.
It's
the
invisible.
Cake will be at lunch.
It's invisible.
Yeah, you going to bring it in?
You got a cake?
Oh, we got a cake.
Daughter,
where
you going to down?
The cat's away.
We got a cake. You did good, Shepard. Jerry?
Okay.
You ready?
Councilmember Alonzo really says she is so sorry she can't even be on the phone to hear y'all sing.
Okay.
So I promised her I'd video it.
Okay. Are you ready?
Sure.
Open the cake. You can't open. Can you see it?
Yeah.
Can we see the cake?
German chocolate be available at lunch for everybody.
There's so much chocolate on this cake.
Okay, Chef, let's go. Yeah.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Monica. Happy birthday to you.
All right. All right.
Everybody. That's a first.
It is 12:14. Can we call this adjourned? Can I get a motion?
Motion
adjourned. Okay, motion adjourned. Thank you.